Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have a fun show lined up. The party cast is going to be here later on in the show to talk reviews. But for now, we have a guest joining us from Eclipse Games. Eduardo is back on the show. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks. I'm good. I'm busy.
Just a little busy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you may imagine, right? Releasing a game is a very hectic period. I mean, the release time is a very hectic period, but yeah. You know, it's a good one too. It's when you get to see the results of your work, and you spend like a year and a half or something like that. I mean, it's been almost 20 months since we started working on Super Toy Gas of Road. So yeah, finally seeing it out is both a reward, and it's kind of like a relief too, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I remember you talking about it the last time you were on. You were, and I don't remember if you mentioned it on the show or off the show, but you did mention you were working on a new Super Toy Cars game, and you were looking at doing like an off-road style game. For the people who don't know what Super Toy Cars Off-Road is, give us the sales pitch quick.
Well, I don't have it in front of me, so I'm not, instead of reading the one that I usually give to the press, if that's okay, I'm going to give you kind of like a different one. Basically, it's Mario Kart meets MotorStorm. That's what we wanted to do anyway. So we wanted to have a kart racer, like very arcadey racing game, no? Like a kart racing, but not exactly. I mean, we want to go down the kart racer route, but we want the handling to be a little bit more complex, to have a little bit of depth that usually most kart racing games don't have. Not talking about Mario Kart. I know Mario Kart has a lot of things that are going on there, but if you go to most indie kart racing games, they are very one-dimensional in terms of the handling. So we wanted to go a little bit more in depth. And we wanted to go down the off-road route, and we wanted to, and if in that sense, I mean, to me, MotorStorm is one of the cornerstones of these kind of games. And they kind of made a milestone when they released it for the PS3, I think it is, in 2005, maybe?
That's a long time ago, man.
Yeah, it is. Maybe it's 2007, or I don't know. I don't remember really, but it was a very long time ago, like 15, 16 years ago. And I remember playing it and thinking, wow, that looks good. And it's also a lot of fun. And I enjoyed a lot the vehicle differences. Like, you had these huge, big rigs and these huge trucks that, you know, you could, play against the bikes and the quads, which were really small, and I enjoyed a lot the boogies. I always liked boogies because they feel clunky and very handmade, and that kind of feeling is like something I really enjoyed. And I thought, well, maybe you should try to do something like that. Try to go try to make something weirder with a franchise and in the off-road scene, and try to go down the route of having very different kind of vehicles and try to pitch them against each other. And that's what we started doing. And we also, one of the things that we wanted to do was have different types of terrain, so you can race on different types of terrain and feel that it should feel different. It should be you know, you should note that there are parts where you go faster, but there are others where you don't, and different vehicles should have different stats for those types of terrains, and that's what we so we wanted to you know, we wanted to have a huge variety of vehicles in a lot of senses, like in terms of size and appearance, but also in terms of how they handle and how they can battle each other. So when you have a big truck and you may not be as fast as some of the other cars, but you can take the shortcuts easily and you can hit other guys and make hurt them. I mean, if you hit a quad or a boogie, you're really, you make a dent to those cars. And that, to me, that's obvious when you play the game, or at least it is quite obvious to me.
Yeah, I have gotten on the tail end of the aggressive AI blowing me the fuck up so many times in this game.
Yeah, maybe that was a bit too harsh. but it feels really good when you do it. When you are in the when you're the one crushing the others, it feels really good.
Oh yeah, I love blowing the hell out of the other cars. It's just the AI in this game. Tell me about the AI, because it feels like it's some sort of dynamic AI where as you do worse, the game lets you do better, but as you start winning more, the game is like, we're going to keep you in check and we're going to come after you.
Yeah. So, well, I don't know if you know, but before I started my own company, I used to work in AI for racing games when I was working for BlackRock Studios, for Disney. I was specialized in AI for racing games. And, yeah, that's one of my main, I don't know how to say it in English, but basically, so one of the things that I got pending to do on my to-do list is do better AI for our games. Because I have made something and it works, but I know I could make so much more if I had the time to do it. But then I have so many other things to do that I cannot really work as long as I'd like to on the AI. But anyway, for this game, we reviewed the AI from Super Troikers 2 and tried to make it more competitive, while at the same time try to keep most people around you all the time, so that you don't feel alone while playing the game. I don't know if that's the feeling that you get or not.
For the most part, yes, but I do notice a few races, like if someone gets out in first place and there's a group of people fighting for second or third, that first place guy is just going to pull away and I can never catch. Like they'll get a quarter of a lap ahead of me. And it feels like there needs to be some kind of item in the game that allows for you to attack the first place, like a blue shell kind of item, one of those dickhead items that everybody hates, but it's really necessary to keep the game fair.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. That's one of the issues that we have, and that's one of the areas where the AI could improve a lot. It sometimes what you say happens. Like there is one guy, and he just pulls away, and there's no way to reel him in because he's too far away for any of the power ups to affect him, and that's annoying. Which it's something that maybe that we're currently getting ideas for Super Troikers 3, which is one of the games that we're working on.
One of the games you're working on. You got a couple of games in the works?
We have more than one, yeah. Cannot talk about the others. But yeah, we have at least Super Troikers 3. In Super Troikers 3 we want to gather all the feedback, and we're not gonna go, as opposed to Super Troikers of Road or Super Troikers 2, where we have developed a lot of work. We have done a lot of work in getting new environments full of new stuff, completely everything, almost everything in Super Troikers of Road and everything in Super Troikers 2 was done from scratch. All the cars, all the vehicles, all the vehicles are completely new in both games. And all the environments in Super Troikers 2 and 95-97% of the environments, the things that you find in environments in Super Troikers of Road, have been done from scratch. And that's kind of a shame, because you got really lots of good work and good art, and you only use them a little bit. I mean, in one or two levels, and you can barely see them. So we are going to try to make the most of what we have, create new items and create new environments, but trying to reuse what we already have and improve over what we already have. I mean, I believe that the handling model right now feels good, and we should improve the physics, because when you crash, sometimes it does nasty things, and that's something that we want to improve. But we want to keep the handling and iterate a little bit of it, and the same thing with the AI and with everything else. And basically, what do we have? What are our strengths? And what's our weaknesses? So try to improve on our weaknesses, keep our strengths the way they are, and make the most of all that we have so that we can make, and we're going to improve in, and we have a couple of new ideas to make some things new and make the environments feel fresh because environments are going to be completely new. I mean, you're going to use many assets that we already have, but they're going to be in different places. You know, we're not going to just go back to the beach. If we go to the beach, it's going to be in one of those all-included hotels, for instance. So you're going to have a little bit on the beach, and then you're going to have a little bit in the swimming pool, and then so it's going to feel completely different to what you've got now. But you can reuse many of the things, like you've got a seat or I don't know how you call this, one of those things that you used to lay on and on the beach, but not on the ground.
A beach towel?
What?
A beach towel or a chair?
Like a beach chair, right? We got one. Well, we can use it. Why not? I mean, what's keeping us from using it again? Who's gonna care if we use it again, if it looks good, and maybe we can change the color instead of being blue, it could be green or red, and then all of a sudden it's completely new.
You have the assets, you might as well make use of them, right?
That's it. But it's going to feel different because it's not going to be the same environment. It's just using the assets and mixing the assets from different levels into a different environment. So, you know, trying to be smart about that so that we can keep the cost relatively low. Like, well, it's going to be still expensive. It's going to be similar to what other games have been, a little bit lower. But we're going to try to make a lot more content. So we're going to try to use most of the cards from Super Troikas 2 and Super Troikas Off-Road and cram them in the same game. Try to think of ways of how both games can be combined and try to make a lot of content for the game so that you get a very big game with lots of levels and lots of and a career mode that is long enough and lots of vehicles, lots of main jobs, lots of unlockables, characters and so on. But trying to be smart about it and trying to have lots of assets and trying to improve on and trying to make, basically, I believe we have a solid base with Super Troikas Off-Road. And try to be smart about it and make a better game.
And what do you mean by make a better game? What kind of downsides are you looking to fix or looking to improve upon?
So there are some things like what I told you. Sometimes the physics is not as good as it should be, or what you said about the AI. Sometimes it pulls away and you cannot get it. So we could try to think of different ways. Basically, improving the AI is one of them, but it's not the only one. Maybe you can add a blue shell like power up, which could be a good idea. We have a couple of game modes that didn't make it to the Super Troikas Off-Road because we didn't have the time, that we are currently prototyping. One of them is going to be a boss like mode, which we really wanted to have, but we didn't have the time. And then we want to make sure that most of the stuff that is criticized on Super Troikas Off-Road is fixed for Super Troikas 3. Try to make sure. Oh, and we have a surprise that we've been meaning to put in many games before, but due to time constraints, we haven't done. And that's something that I don't want to speak about. But that's again something else that I believe make the environments and the levels feel fresh and new and different from other games.
So there's a secret you want to put in, but you're not telling us. That's,
yeah, I hope it's
the teasing.
And I hope it's worth it. I cannot talk about it. The game is like 2 years from now to be released, or at least a year and a half. So it'd be I don't know if you say like throwing a stone to your own like roof. I don't know. That's not it's something that you say in Spanish. I'm sorry. I even know how I say it. But basically, it would be counterproductive to talk about something that maybe even we cannot get it to the final game. I believe we will because we are already prototyping it, and it's looking good, and we are excited about it. But you know, you never know what's going to happen. It's when it's so far away.
Now, I have an idea for an item that you can use in the game. You need a blue shell type item. We mentioned that. So what you can do is when you collect this item, it launches out a stack of pancakes that falls on top of the lead car. And our buddy George, we have a sound clip that we play on the show where he screams, "Wet pancakes!" And you could just have the pancakes fall on top of him, have that sound clip go, "Wet pancakes!" Syrup go flying everywhere. That's my awful idea for this episode.
Well, it's not so bad. Eh? I mean, I don't like the pancake thing because it's hard to make food look good. You know,
just use syrup then.
Yeah, particularly syrupy, because it's gonna look weird. It's not gonna have the right physics and so on. Although if you get it to look right, it looks really good. But most of the time, it doesn't look good, and it is weird. But it's not a bad idea, like throwing something and making it fall from your head. Yeah, or maybe even falling ahead of you, and you just have to avoid it. I'll think about it, but I don't know about the wet pancakes. That part is hard to do.
I mean, it's just a running joke with our show. We even went to the lengths that we made lip balm, like chapstick, pancake flavored, and we gave it away. That's the kind of weird shit that we do. So, before we went live, you mentioned that you were currently working on other ports for the game. Right now, the game is on PC and Xbox. What's coming up?
So, we're currently working on the PS4, PS5 version. I hope we could have it out by the end of March. I'm crossing my fingers. You cannot see it, but I'm crossing my fingers. And then I'm going to start working on the Switch version. The idea is the Switch version to be out end of April, early May, probably early May. And that's going to be it. I mean, at least for the time being, that's I think that's enough. That's the PS4, PS5 version. The PS5 version is looking good. Yes, as good as the Xbox Series S is looking. Basically, they are very similar machines. They have very, I mean, they are really good. And if you make a game that can run on an Xbox One then or a PS4, then obviously when you put it on a PS5, it's going to look a lot better. I'd like to have, again, it's the main problem is that I'd like to have, like, for instance, I think we could cram in more vehicles for the PS5 and the Xbox Series SX. But changing that takes time. And I don't have time to spend on that. But even if I can take a few weeks and maybe when I have it finished or whatever, maybe I could do a patch and try to see if we can make, because it would be great if you had instead of 8, like 12 characters in the races in Xbox Series SX. Or in PlayStation 5.
Yeah, that would be... I know Wreckfest, I think, does the same thing, where the last gen only has so many cars, but the next gen has, like, 16 instead of 8, something like that.
Yeah, that is something that I really... I guess the problem is that if you do that, I got, like, lots of places in the code that say, okay, what's the number of cars? Then you do this. And in lots of places, I am assuming that the number of cars is below a certain number. And then if you put 12, like for instance, we only have 9 characters. So I'm assuming that there is always a character available for your next car. And if you got 9 characters, but you put 12 or 16 cars, then you're going to have to repeat them. There is no going around that.
No.
So I'm going to have to find a way to do it. I mean, we have now like different costumes, you know, for the characters. So we can fix that problem. It's not fixable. Yes, you just have to do all that, and that's something that I didn't have the time to do.
Well, you could make me a character. I give you full permission. You can use my full body likeness for free. Just make me a playable character. I'm good with that.
It's kind of weird because since you got this picture in the sky where you got the cat in front of you, I barely know how you look.
You gotta fire up the Twitch channel and you can see what I look like. The camera's on there.
Oh, you got the camera on. Do you want me to switch it on, by the way?
Oh no, I don't have a way to display the Skype video, unfortunately. So my video's used on the stream, but I have no way to actually display Skype's video because I'm stupid and I don't understand how OBS and technology works anymore. I don't know what, like, I used to remember how technology worked, and as I get older, I just feel dumber.
What is Yo Camisa and what is the name of the Twitch TV?
Twitch.tv/TheSMLPodcast.
TheSML.
I tweeted and tagged the clips on Twitter. So.
Today I've been. You're right. I mean, I should have seen it, but the thing is, I'm rubbish with social networks. I must admit it.
I have a guy who does all the tweets for me too. So I don't like bothering. Like, I'm old. I'm curmudgeon-y. I don't want to deal with things anymore. So
I can see you now. Good. So yeah. How old are you, by the way?
I am 40.
Well, then you're not so old. I'm turning 41 next month, in like 3 weeks time.
You're in March?
Yeah.
What's your birthday?
March the 13th.
Mine's the 18th.
The 13th, sorry.
Yeah, mine's 18th.
Ah, the 18th? Oh, yeah. So yeah.
And my wedding anniversary is the 16th. So that's a busy week, holy hell.
Yeah, and you're 1981 or 1982?
81.
81, like me then, yeah? So we're both same age.
Yeah, look at that. We're getting up there together. Yeah, we've got each other, Eduardo.
I can understand that you. I feel old with social networks too. I feel like, I mean, I don't feel like writing about me and what I do all the time. I mean, in my personal social networks, they're almost empty. I barely write on Instagram, and what I do is mostly sports stuff. I like doing some calisthenics and stuff like that. And I sometimes, like once every 2 months or something like that, I post something, and that's it. Because I don't feel like spending the time doing that. Like, I feel a bit clumsy with cell phones, and then, you know, thinking about what to say, how to say it, and it's like, man, that's a lot of work. What is the point?
That's effort. I don't have time for effort. I'm a busy guy. I have naps to take.
Yeah. And all the effort I have to do, I'd rather do it for work, because usually it pays off. Not always, but usually it pays off. And that is just the other part is just narcissism, a little bit of narcissism, or that's how I see it. Like, you know, you like to see yourself good in Instagram, and you know, you like your fabs and your hearts or whatever it's called, or likes, or I don't know what's the name.
We got to get on Instagram. I'm not on there. I don't use
that.
You're not
there?
No.
And Twitter is like, well, I only use the company Twitter account. That's the only one I use, because the rest is full of political stuff and it's very nasty. I mean, every time you enter there, it's like, wow, why people are so nasty? Why couldn't they try to be more polite and nice to each other? It makes things a lot easier for everyone.
There's assholes everywhere. It's like, hey, go check out our new show. We have an interview with a cool developer. It's like, go fuck yourself. Thank you.
Yeah, the thing is, for some reason, they kind of like feel more at home at Twitter. I don't know why. I mean, it's... I don't know. I mean, maybe because there's not so many pictures and videos. It's more about being writing and saying something short and snappy. And then if you're an asshole, then you know, more people are going to feel strongly about what you say, whether it's pro or against. I don't know, but I feel I don't like it. I'm old and I feel old.
Our friend Carnage in chat, he says he is enjoying Super Toy Cars Off-Road and his video should be up soon. Seemed like a lot of people are enjoying the game. It just came out. What are the early thoughts on the game? What's the early reception been like?
I've been trying to follow the reviews. I've been reading like a bunch of them. I try to read every review, at least every review I can read in English or Spanish. I mean, I cannot speak any other language. I tried to use Google Translate, but it's not always the best way of reading a review. But in general, they're agreeing that there is that the game is cool, that there is lots of content, that there is lots to do, that the vehicles look good and they feel different. And you know, the game in general is relatively it's evolving. It's obvious that it's a franchise and it's the third one and it feels that way. But they also agree that there could be a little bit more polishing, that there is some clunky physics at some point, and that the AI, it can be harsh. You're not the only one that have said that. But yeah, and there is a mixed bag in that sense, but the most of the time it feels good, but when it doesn't, it hinders the experience considerably.
Yeah. I know the only real gripes that I have with the game, I mentioned this to you in an email, I wish the camera was further back. I feel like I get a sense of claustrophobia with the camera being so close to the car. I'm the guy in Forza who has the camera as far back as possible. I like being able to see as much as I can.
Yeah. That's one of the things that that some people have mentioned, and we're already doing for Super Toy Gear 3. So, but again, that's something that I knew we could have done for this one. I knew we could, but again, we had to decide. I feel like I'm always like putting excuses, but you know, it's so far. I don't know how, but do you know how many people worked on Super Toy Gear of Road?
No.
What could be your guess?
Total people, a dozen maybe?
Well, it's more like five.
Wow.
I am the only programmer, and I do the game direction too. Then there is we had a lead designer, and we have help with the design of the tracks at the end. The lead designer does the UI too. He's a graphics designer, so he can work with Photoshop and Illustrator, and he's good with that. So he does both things. We have help at the end with the track design, and we have two artists, one for the vehicles and one for the environments. And that's basically it, plus the help from Tyson, the invaluable help from Tyson, for the music and that stuff. But, you know, it's like, that's about it. I mean, the lead designer is the one who did all the most of the sound too. So most of the sound design is from here, from his keys too. So it's not like we're a lot of people. We are a very small team, and me being the sole programmer and directing the game, and you know, and the company and everything, it's like, yeah, I'm struggling a bit. For the next one, I'm getting someone else because I believe we are in a financial situation that we can afford that. So I'm gonna be doing less programming, hopefully, and I got someone to help me with that. But you know, it's hard to do, and that's why I use that excuse of not having enough time. But I believe it's true.
I mean, when you're the only one programming on such a big game, I mean, there's only so much one person can do, right?
Yeah, and there is a lot of code in that game. I mean, quite a few people have. There was a review that I was reading today that they mentioned that they like a lot the graphic aspects of the game, and that it showed that it was the power of the Unreal Engine. And I said, well, it's not Unreal, it's Unity, and it's heavily modified because we have added a lot of stuff that I've done myself to try to look better and still keep, and we are not using even the higher resolution or higher graphics part. We're using the lowest one, and we are adding stuff on top of that to try to make it look better, but still keep running fast. And that is a lot of work. I've inherited a lot of code from other games, but the lines of code in this game, including blank lines and command lines, is roughly near a quarter of a million lines of code.
Jeez. that sounds like a lot.
It is a lot. It's, yeah. I mean, as I said, we're talking about only the lines of code that I have written. You know, not the ones from plugins or stuff like that. I'm talking only the lines of code that I have written. And it includes everything, like from shaders to editor tools to everything. We got lots of tools, like, I don't know, like maybe 30 or 40 tools to do different stuff. And some of them are even not even used because they are already old and not used, but how do you say, like, deprecated. But yeah, it is a lot of work that went in the game, and I had to do most of it, and it's like, yeah, well, I cannot afford to spend that much time and try to do more.
Jeez. Carnage in chat saying what everyone is thinking, saying, I don't even know how to do one line of code, let alone a quarter of a million.
Well, I mean, that's my job anyway. I mean, I studied for this. I am prepared, and I am good at this, and I write relatively quickly, and I'm good at that sort of stuff. But it's too much work, and I am trying to. The problem is that, yeah, if I only did that, then it'd be great. That's okay. But then I have to go on top of that. I have to do everything from the financiers of the company to sweeping the floor. I mean, everything. I mean, everyone in Eclipse works from home, so I only have to sweep the floor of my office in my home. But still.
Did you always all work from home, or is this a result of COVID?
No, I started working from home when I worked at Disney, like, I'm talking about 12 years ago, I
think. Oh, wow.
13 years ago, in September 2009, I went back to Spain, and I kept my job at Disney, and I started working from home. I used to travel 1 week a month to the UK, and then I started my company. And we had some offices at the beginning, but I liked working from home, so we barely used them. So after a couple of years of having the offices and not using them, I thought, okay, maybe I'm wasting 3,000 to 4,000 euros a year. So I say, you know what? Fuck off. I'm gonna decide that this is gonna be all working from home. And the thing is, if you get the right people, it works very well. The problem is that not everyone is suited to work from home, or that's the way I see it. So
yeah, Trivium Champ in chat said that he heard you worked for Disney, and he's curious to know more about that.
I worked for a company in the UK called BlackRock Studio, which before was called Climax Racing in Brighton, and that company was bought by Disney 2006 2007, I don't remember. And they did they were behind Pure and Split Second. I actually worked
on both. Incredible games. I fucking love both of those games. I think I mentioned that every time you're on the show.
Yeah, I am very proud of the work that we did there. I'm really happy that I had the opportunity to work with that team. They were really talented people in that company. I'm really proud of the work that we did there. I'm really proud of Pure. It was a really cool and fun game. And Split Second was really good looking and really spectacular. I'm a bit sad that it didn't get reception that was good enough to go on with that. I would have loved to make either a Pure 2 or a Split Second 2 game, because I think they were both great games, and I would have loved to do that.
I mourn the loss of Split Second, like every, because I still have it installed on my Series X because I love the game that much. I love the fact that both Pure and Split Second are backward compatible on the Series X, so I can fire those up still anytime I want, thank God, and still play them. Split Second is just such a fun racing game. It is, it nails every aspect of what I wanted in a racer, with the explosions and the multiple paths and fucking over your opponents at the last second. It was it's overused, but it's such a thrill ride. It's, I love Split Second. So thank you again for all your work on that game.
Well, that's, yeah, and as I said, I'm really proud and thank you. And I'm really happy that as I said, it's a great game. I spend a lot of time working on that one. I remember, I suppose I can say this now, but, well, we crunched at the end of Split Second. I don't think that was a secret, and I don't believe that anyone would be surprised. And I was crunching, we were crunching quite a few months and a few months, but I remember crunching the last, I spent the last 3 to 4 weeks in Brighton. So I usually went one week a month. And I spent the last 3 to 4 weeks of development there. And I was working, I believe, roughly 80 hours a week.
Ooh.
And I was so burned that I only worked 6.5 days a week. So I was there at the office roughly 14 to 16 hours a day for 6 days straight. And then the seventh, I was just so knackered that I couldn't go on. And I just took half a day off and then went back after that. And I made enough overtime that I got roughly 20 days of holidays, even though I was given only 1 hour of holidays for every 3 hours of overtime.
Wow, so, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah,
that's a lot of overtime.
but that's it. And I am it was work. It was a lot of work, but it was. I am really happy that we made it, and I believe, I'm really happy with the results. I was really happy at Black Rock. It was a bit of a pity that it didn't work out.
It's a shame that studio got shut down. There was so much promise there. The fact that Split Second and Blur released on like the same day is such a tragedy because both games were phenomenal.
Yeah, I agree. That was, and it wasn't intentional. I mean, it was because I believe initially Blur was intended for 2 or 3 months ahead of that, but they had to delay it. And I think we released like 1 week from each other or 2 weeks, like, and we released the same month as Red Dead Redemption, which also was not great, but again, we couldn't change the date. Yeah.
Man, that's a shame.
Yeah, but there's nothing we can do now. And yeah, at least we, as I said, I learned a lot in that company, and I'm really proud of the work that we did. And yeah, maybe at some point Disney will decide to do a Split Second too. Who knows?
That would be fantastic.
I wouldn't hold my breath though.
Oh man. So what are you playing these days? What are you enjoying in your time off?
Well, I have been, so recently I got a PS5. I got my hands on a PS5. It was bloody hard. But I wanted to be able to play PS5 games because I was doing a PS5 game, and I wanted to understand, you know, there's some kind of like requirements that you have for a PS5 game, like just think about the activities and so on. And, you know, I'd rather understand what the hell they are.
Yeah, it's good to know what you got to do.
Yeah, it's like, and so I finally got it, and I have barely been able to play anything there. I played a little bit of Hot Wheels, which, by the way, is a great game. I mean, I know it's...
Jacob, our co-host Jacob is addicted to Hot Wheels.
Yeah.
Well, he's got the season passes. He's like, I'm going to get SpongeBob on Monday.
Well, it looks really good, and it plays well. I kind of like... The problem is that I'm so used to the handling of Super Toy Cars that when I go to different racing games, it takes a while for me to get used to it. particularly when it's one so close in the setting and the ambience like that. It's like, yeah, it's very Arcadian. When Kazam don't accelerate as quickly as ours, it's like, come on, go faster, go faster. Yeah, I mean, it's not a car racer game. It's a bit more Arcadian, more. But I like it. I like it a lot. It's really good and it's very well done. I mean, the guys, I think the company that did the game is Milestone.
Yeah.
I think it's the name. Yeah, they do very good games, very good racing games. They are really good at that. And yeah, so no surprises there, but yeah, they did a great product. But I have only played a little bit. I need to play more. And I've been playing recently Gears Tactics. I'm enjoying it. It's time to feel a bit too long. I mean, I have spent 20 hours, according to Steam, which probably has been during the last month or month and a half, because I can play one day every two. But yeah, I'm enjoying it, but it's like, yeah, please finish now. I mean, I want to know how it finishes, but I don't want to grind along all the missions. I just want to finish.
Yeah, some games, they don't know when to quit.
Yeah, well, I mean, if I had more time, I wouldn't mind that. But since I am a bit short on the time thing, you know, while we've been at that and having a company and, you know, and be importing the game to five bloody different consoles. Then I guess the little time I like experiences that are guiding me by the nose, you know, like I don't want open world experiences. They are great, but I don't have the time for them. It's like, yeah, tell me what to do. And that's it. And I'll do it. And if it's fun, I'll go on doing it. And this one was a lot of fun at the start, and it's still a lot of fun. But now it's like, yeah, I just want to finish that. And I'm trying to play another. I got Iron Harvest prepared to play too. And I don't know, maybe I wanted to play a few other games. I played a little bit of Unpacking.
Love that game. I adored Unpacking.
Yeah, it's so cute and nice. And it's the kind of game that I can go and play with my wife and son. And, you know, it's like, yeah, let's play a little bit. And my son doesn't understand it very much because it's, you know, most of the time when it's 90s stuff, it's like, what is that? What is that? That is a Walkman? What the fuck is that? He's 8 years old, so I'm trying to explain it to him. It's not even easy. Like, yeah, there were tapes, and you know, the tapes, like, you had to rewind it. You use a pen, and then it's like, what are you talking about?
Tapes, they sound like work.
Yeah,
you had to put effort into watching a movie or listening to a song back in the day. You had to like rewind and find the right spot. Oh.
Yeah, but I find it like it's good. It's really nice. And I don't know what else I've been playing. I've been playing with my son, like Brain Academy or whatever it is on the Switch, which is a nice thing to do, because he's struggling with the school a little bit and he doesn't like reading and that stuff. But then if you give him a game like that, he's put a lot of effort. I mean, it's surprising how well he does compared on how much it takes for him to read a single page. Hmm. And then on my own time, I've been playing. I've also been playing on the Switch. The Riot game, the one where you are. That is a RPG, like a JRPG.
There's so many RPGs on Switch. I can't even think.
No, with the Riot one, the League of Legends one.
Oh, League of Legends. What's the name of it? League of Legends. RPG. I'm looking this up because I have nothing else better to do.
Yeah. Well,
King or Hextech Mayhem?
No, Ring.
Rune King, a League of Legends story. There it is.
Yeah, that's the one I've been playing. It's cool. It looks and plays good. But RP isn't of my cup of tea usually, and this one is starting to, you know, to feel a bit too grindy for me, even though it's not really grindy. But I'm, as I said, I like when I'm taken by the nose, and if I'm going to be told a story, I don't want to be walking from one place to another. It's like, yeah, take me there, please. I don't have time. I walk in life. I don't need to walk in video games.
Fair point. I did have a quick question about the PS5, since you have one. Are you planning to implement any use of, like, the haptic triggers in Super Toy Cars Off-Road? Like, when you go over different trains, get different vibration feels? I don't know how that shit works. I don't know if it's easy to program. I don't know if it's possible.
I don't have plans at the moment because I don't have time. I'm sorry. I feel like I'm excusing it all the time, but... I'm currently trying to get a steering wheel to work with the game on PS4 and PS5, at least one that I've been loaned to work on that. But adding haptic feedback would be a good idea. It's something that when I play the Hot Wheels, that's one of the things that first struck me. Like, what's happened here with my with my triggers? And yeah, I'd like to, but I don't know how easy or hard it is. Particularly, yeah, probably doing something is easy, but doing something that feels good is not. And that's what, and so I may be giving it a go at some point, depending on how much time, but it probably won't be, it should probably be a patch that we do or something like that. It's not easy, man, because as I said, I'm doing the ports and so on, but then when I got also, some freelance work pending, like I have signed some contracts to port a couple of games to, different consoles. And I have more of those probably line up to, you know, that are gonna, that's great news for, because that's job and that's money. And so that's work and that's money, but that's
keeps you busy.
But it's again, it's not easy. It is work for me, and it's, yeah, I'm not having a lot of spare time as of lately. But yeah, that's how it is, I guess. That's life. It's not, there's no easy answer for everything. And yeah, pancakes.
Yeah, I told you, pancakes in the chat. You need those pancakes to just drop down on the first place guy. You need pancake physics. We're going to have to learn that.
Not easy, man. Not easy.
I'll have to send you the sound clip. Maybe that'll change your mind. Oh, man. Well, I know we've been chatting for a while here. Is there anything you wanted to talk about that I didn't bring up?
I don't know, really. I mean, we talked a lot about the game and then about other stuff. I don't know, man. I think, I'm cool. I mean, if anyone has any questions, I'm also in the Twitch channel in case I can read it too. But no, I don't think, I think we cover most of the new game, which is great, and then we chat about other stuff. No, what kind of games are you playing now, by the way?
What am I? I'm playing, I'm always playing Rock Band 4. I can't get enough of that. I've been playing Grim Dawn quite a bit. I am enjoying my time with that. I'm trying to get back into Assassin's Creed because of the Ragnarok DLC coming out, and then I just fire up whatever review stuff is coming along and... do what I can on there, so I have enough that I could talk about on the show with whoever's covering it, and I'm just all over the place.
Well, but how old is Rock Band?
15, 16 years, something like that. Rock Band has been around for a long time, and it's still getting new DLC.
It's still getting new DLC?
Yep.
Wow.
New songs every week still. They took a couple of years off after Rock Band 3 ended, but when Rock Band 4 started back up, it's been DLC basically every week since. They've missed one or two here or there for, like, holidays or whatever else is going on, but they've been consistent. There's almost 3,000 songs in that game.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's impressive. That's a lot of work, and well, I guess they can relatively they can make it relatively easy now. But still, it's impressive that they have kept that game alive for so long.
Yeah, I hope it stays alive. They were just picked up by Epic to do shit in Fortnite, but I hope they leave them a little bit of staff and money to do Rock Band still.
Yeah. Well, if it works, why change it, right?
True. Hope so. We'll see. But give us all the information about Super Toy Cars. How much is it? Where can we get it?
Should I kind of ask? Did he ask about, like, I understand that he asked about
DLC or title updates for the game. Anything there? I didn't even notice that. You're ahead of me.
I just read it and I was like, yeah, it's a good question. I mean, there is no plan for DLC right now. The reason being that usually we don't sell enough that DLC would make sense. Usually, if you get your game on one of those Game Pass or PlayStation Plus or stuff like that, making DLC is usually a good idea because they are you got lots of copies and then there's like lots of people that have played and when they see new DLC, you're like, well, I can go and play and buy it. This is very cheap and then I can enjoy this a little bit longer or whatever. Or it's more stuff of what I like. But getting, you know, I don't know, for instance, if we sell 10 to 15,000 copies on Xbox, that'll be a lot of copies for us. That'll be great. If you assume that in DLC is going to make like 10% of the copies that you have sold, and probably that is even being optimistic, it's not going to be worth it for us. It's hard for it to be worth. Well, if you get your game on Game Pass, and you probably get 100, 200, 300, 500 downloads, 500,000 downloads, no? And then if you can get only 1 or 2% of those to buy your DLC, then all of a sudden you've got 10,000 DLC copies that you have sold. And it's like, yeah, then it's going to make a lot of sense.
Oh, Carnage asking about a cheat. Of course he needs achievements. Carnage is the resident achievement hunter. He loves his achievements. So any plans for title updates that might include extra achievements? I don't know what the requirements are there for those.
I'm not sure because I'm not sure it's easy to add achievements with free updates. I'm not sure, particularly if you have already completed the 1,000 game points, which you have to if you want to release a game on Xbox. I don't remember what are the requirements for that. And
I know there's some indie developers or publishers like Zetalon. They have games like $5 indie games that have 5,000 achievement points in them.
Wow.
Through free updates every couple of months, they'll release a new update with like complete more levels or open more treasure chests. And they're just achievement farms. I don't know how that shit works, but I would love to see more games put more achievements in games. I think it's cool when games get updated with new stuff to do.
Yeah, it's something I'll think about it.
Carnage saying to get in touch with ID at Xbox about it. So.
Yeah. Well, before that, I don't like to bother these guys. They are really busy, but I like to read all the documentation before bothering them because they're really busy guys. But anyway, I'll check and I'll see. But the problem is that we don't have a lot of new content planned. Yeah. We don't have any new content planned. But if we sold really well, then yes, we'll do some DLC because if we sold really well, or because of some miracle, we get the game in Game Pass or in PlayStation Plus or whatever. Then yes, we'll do definitely DLC. But
that would be awesome if you could get it in Game Pass. I don't know how that works either, but that would be cool as hell.
Yeah, it's not easy because you know there's so many great games on Game Pass right now. It's hard to to get in there. But we tried, but it wasn't possible at the time. And I don't blame them. I mean, it's like you got really great games there. I just feel that our game could have fit there because there is not many kart racing games in Game Pass. They got Forza games, which are amazing. But they don't have many arcade racing games. But yeah, that's how it is, and yeah, we are. Well, I don't know. I hope that at least if we can make some money with Super Toy Cars of Road, and it's worth it, and we can go on living doing what we like, which is making video games, then I'm gonna be happy.
Hey, that's the important part.
Yeah, that's it.
All right, so tell us, where is the game? How much is it? What do we got to do to get it? Give us all the info.
Okay, so Super Toy Cars of Road is out now on Steam and Xbox. It's $19.99, but it's got some sale deals, right, for the release deals with, I don't know, 15% maybe? I believe it's 15% off. So if you get it this week, you're still getting it for $16.99, I think. And it's it's available on as I said on Steam and Xbox, and it'll be out in a few months' time on PS4, PS5, and the Switch.
Sweet. And where can people keep up to date with you and what you're doing? We know it's not on Twitter because you don't like Twitter.
Yeah, that's the only thing I put. I like to retweet every now and then and stuff, and I write every so often, like not very often, but every now and then I write some things on Twitter. And that's the thing. I mean, because we don't have that's the problem. I am rubbish at that. I am really rubbish in the marketing and communication department. I'm good at programming, but programming is something that you do alone on your own time. I mean, I'm alone in silence or with music, but that's it. And people are not bothering you. You don't have to interact with people. That's what I do well. And if I have to interact with people, it takes a lot of effort for me, and I do it if I have to, but it's not the things that I do well. I'm a bit of an introvert guy, I guess.
I know the feeling. I like being to myself too. So.
Well, but you direct a podcast. You got good people skills.
I mean, they're okay people skills. I could fake it enough to get through these things.
Yeah, well, maybe. I mean, I guess I'm a nerd. That doesn't have so. I mean, in English, doesn't have these bad connotations anymore, or does it? But I don't know. Nerd is it then like a bad word or not?
Not really, no. I'm a nerd. Anymore.
Yeah, well, I'm a nerd, and I'm happy being a nerd. I mean, yeah. Why not?
Power to nerds.
Yeah, and there's some people that I don't like, and as I said before, I don't like confrontation. I like when things are kept polite and you know, good manners, and so. I don't. I mean, writing on Twitter is hard because you have to be. I like to be polite. I like to be very conscious about what I say. I whenever I write something in public, I write it. I read it. I rewrite it again. Reread it again, and then maybe then I can hit send. But you know, it takes a lot of time, and I always think of what could people think that I wanted to say. Did I give any hints on anything that I wouldn't want to or anything like that? And it's like, yeah, that obviously never happens when you're talking in person like we're doing now. But when you're writing, at least on the Twitter or on emails or whatever, I always think of that, and it takes a lot of time, a lot.
I love getting people to say what they regret on this show. That's my favorite. Like, oh, I shouldn't have said that. Too late. It's recorded. It's in history now. People are going to hear it, and you're going to be judged. But
yeah, there's no going back.
Oh, man. Eduardo, it is always a pleasure having you on the show. We got to get you back on again. Maybe when the other consoles are ready to go, we could get you on for another chat. Or when Super Toy Cars 3 is ready to go, we'll get you back on for a chat. Either way, we love having you on here. We do have to wrap this up. Everyone else, stick around. We're going to have some more show after some music. And then we're going to do party cast and reviews and just hang out, and we'll be right back. So, Eduardo, do you have any final words to end the interview?
It's my pleasure, man. I mean, it's always a pleasure talking to you and your soft, nice voice. It always amazes me. I mean, now I can put a face to that voice. It's kind of even weird. I didn't expect it, but yeah. Anyway, it's always a pleasure talking to you. You know it. And I always enjoy it. So I'll be more than happy to join you anytime you want.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another huge thanks to Eduardo at Eclipse Games for coming on and chatting about Super Toy Cars Off-Road. Moving on, we have a lot of show to go. The Party Cast is here. Tim is here. Purnell is here. Chris is here. And Brooke is here. How's everyone doing?
You know, Game Boy Advance playing and all that. I'm just doing my Game Boy Advance over here.
You're not playing a Game Boy Advance, Purnell. You're just...
Well, that came out of nowhere.
You don't know that. I could be playing a Game Boy Advance, and you would never know.
You're not.
You would. How do you know?
Because I know.
No, you don't.
You're just trying to bring up things from before we started recording.
I just happen to love the Game Boy Advance.
So you could be a dick.
Joe is having none of this.
Purnell's being a dick.
But that's what I'm doing. We didn't have to go down that road. I'm just telling you, I'm playing a Game Boy Advance. That is it.
Joe is wrestling control over his own show for the first time since the show began. He's finally had enough.
He's in here all like, okay, we need to start the show. Everyone needs to be quiet. Purnell, stop trying to pull things back that we won't record.
I feel the power enveloping me. How's everyone else doing? I'm talking about Game Boys and that. Nobody else told me about their Game Boys. What are you guys doing?
Man, I had the purple Game Boy Advance. I don't know what color y'all had. I had that dark purple, solid.
I had an orange one, the Torchic Orange. Ooh. Game Boy SP from Japan. I imported that fucker. Nice. I just sold it last year, though. I figured it's been sitting on my shelf collecting dust. It was time to move on and be loved by someone anew.
Did you turn a good profit on it?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I like to hear.
Yeah, definitely.
Mine was just white.
Oh, that's boring.
It was also from Japan.
Nice.
And Walmart. Oh, I was gonna say Walmart gave no fucks, and they sold me all the like launch games about a week early.
Nice.
Hell yeah!
Wow.
That's right. I've been giving up on Circle of the Moon since 7 days before day one. Sorry, Brooke. I keep talking over you. What's up?
Oh no, I was just reminiscing to myself. I had the 3DS. with the black case with the gold, like, Ocarina of Time and stuff on it from Zelda. Yeah. That was, nice. Like, my big collector's item I splurged on. That, to this day, is the only console of any sort that is sitting on my shelf collecting dust that's not being used. And, you know, I beat it up. It's not really resellable. It's got a lot of damage, so I'm going to hold on to it.
Some people buy the love. Some people buy the love. It's like, hey, this console I dropped 5 times. It's got a nick in the corner. Just showed you I cared. $300.
Personality.
Cool.
Nice. It's character. Nice. It's building character. That's what those scuffs and things are. It's character.
I always get to consoles before, like, special editions show up, so I always just have kind of a vanilla device.
What you're saying, you're not a Nintendo suck up and buys like 5 versions of it, and I'm saying it knowing that I also do that?
I mean, I wouldn't go that far. I just...
I had so many different Game Boy Advance SPs because they just kept releasing different versions.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted the NES one. I wanted the pink one. I wanted the blue one.
I did get the NES-P. That's the one I still play. That's the one I'm playing right now, is the NES-P.
Oh, yeah. The NES-P is not only my, like, most valuable of my SPs, but it's also the one I use the most, so it's worn out. I need to, like, change out everything on it.
I knew how to change things out, because I actually broke, because, like, basically a friend of my brother's girlfriend used to work for, I don't want to call it an orphanage, but it's like a child care center, and someone donated a whole bunch of Game Boy Advance SPs, and when they were closing up at one point, they just gave her a bunch of them, so she gave them all to me. So I had a stack of SP specifically intended to play, you know, was that Zelda Four Sword Adventures? But then someone was like, you should play Harmony of Distance, the Castlevania game, to give it another chance, because I've been trash talking it for years. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'll do that.
Correctly, so the by first the way. Time.
So I took a crack at the fact that it's a clamshell case. I was like, you know, I'll just put it in my pocket and walk around. No one had been traumatized in the past for putting things in my pocket and them coming out broken. Well, I should have heeded the past because it happened again.
Oh,
I have
no.
A Game Boy Advance SP upstairs with a shattered screen. Still turns on, but it's a shattered screen. So I would need to replace it for it to be functional again. But
did you sit down with it in your pocket or something?
Yeah, but it was in my pocket. It wasn't like in my back pocket. It was in my side pocket. But nonetheless, I sat down in my car, drove somewhere, got out of the car, and it was shattered.
I always used to put my SP and my DS and my 3DS in my pocket, and I never ever broke them from them being in there.
I had one friend who put a quarter. He had a quarter in his pocket. The quarter somehow ended up in the game slot of his DS, and it shorted it out.
No,
oh my god!
Like, why didn't all of he that have a luck. Game in there?
That was my question. But
like, what are you doing?
It's still a shock that a quarter still managed to just rest its way in there. It shorted out.
That's not how DLC works, people.
Just start the coin. They'll just take it. Nintendo zaps your money.
It's not a coin slot.
Yeah. My sicko portable behavior is that I am all of them are. Well, OK, so, you know, I did like go base Game Boy Advance to SP to SP Lite, but like now all of my portables are all a black and red color scheme, which involved reshelling my Game Boy SP. It has involved like importing a black and red Vita from Japan, PlayStation Vita from Japan, because they released that over there.
Ooh.
And then I got a black and red PSP 3000, which I think was also Japan only. They get all the, I mean, as much as we get occasional cool colors, Japan gets all of the cool colors.
They do.
So like, I went out of my way reshelling my SP, and I mean, my DS and my 3DS were already set, so like I need to get my hands on like a black and red, like one of the Play It Loud Game Boys, original Game Boys, and then I think I'll be happy.
That was probably the most extreme Nintendo ever got.
And at last, I will be happy.
Oh,
games.
What's the craziest, like, collector system you've ever wanted to own? Like, my white whale that I've always wanted to own is a Panasonic Q.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Was that the GameCube that had the weird top that could play DVDs, too?
Yeah, Japan only.
With
the mirrored front. Oh, that thing was so nice looking. I've always wanted to have one of those.
I didn't have a system in that like that in mind, and for the most part, until one day I remember, like, my, you know, Joe Gaiman, he had a this, I don't even know what to call it anymore. He had this machine whose name I can't remember anymore, but it was like a game console, but you could pull out like slots from it to basically put a different system inside of it. And they play like the Sega CD, the Turbo Duo, like the 3DO. It pretty much played a bulk of like the late 90s CD systems on one box. And it was this really cool device that he had. I'm like, oh man, where'd you get that? He's like, oh, I imported you. I'm like,
that sounds unofficial as fuck.
No, it was a real machine. I just don't remember what it was called. Like, it was an official machine. It was like probably Panasonic branded or something, but basically it was an official machine, but it was, I guess, licensed through other parties. I don't know. I was just enamored with its existence. Hmm. Aside from that, I got my white whale, which is the Turbo Duo.
Nice.
I would say the that anniversary PlayStation system, but I wasn't concerned about the shell so much. I don't really count shells as much. It needs to come really out. A Turbo really Duo. It was a funny thing. I actually got that when it was on the shelf. Like, it was like I got one of the last print models of it, or was it one of the first? I don't even know. But I got it for Christmas one year. I begged my mom to get it. We didn't have much money. She scripted and saved for that bad boy, though. Took the whole year. But I got my system and six games.
Cool. Correction, your mom's a, seven. Your mom is a goddamn saint. Wait, that's an oxymoron, isn't it?
The lady made an investment we are now enjoying.
I do appreciate that.
Pernell's mom, thank you.
I appreciate that Pernell doesn't know if it was the first run or the last run, and it was so short-lived, it could be either.
Thing is, like, I've heard people claim, they've claimed that there was a version of the Turbo Duo that didn't come with the 6-in-1 disc and all that stuff. But I'm like, I thought that was the only way you could buy it. And that in itself might be a way of determining which version I got. But it came with a bunch of games. It was like the Ease 1 and 2, Gate of Thunder, Bonk 1, Bonk 2.
Jeez.
Like one other game, but then you could put in the code to play Bomberman also. So,
oh yeah.
Big Adam in chat is saying his white whale is a well-maintained C128, which I have no idea what the hell that is, or an Amiga ST1200.
Right? Yeah.
All right, yeah. That's how you know it's a white whale. I've not even seen it. It's an elusive beast. Out in the ocean.
Mine is just the Mother 3 Game Boy Micro. That was Japan only.
Yeah.
A friend of mine had it,
but man, is it beautiful.
No, it would be shelf. It would be a shelf item for me, but it's a really, really beautiful system.
Also, you said Adam is in the chat?
Yeah, Big Adam.
I'll be damn. Hey, dude, I haven't seen you in like 25 years or 19 diggity six.
Well, you should have shown up to MagFest.
Well, you know how it goes. Yeah. My tears. They would have gotten all over the equipment, and then no one wanted to have that. I would have got Colossus roared out of the building, and no one was there.
It wasn't as bad this year. The roar wasn't as bad, thankfully.
It was more of a Colossus whisper.
a Colossus rumble.
It was a Colossus polite admonishment.
That damn thing. I'll be glad when it's over and done with. And yet at the same time, it's interesting that it persisted as long as it has.
No, it's not. It's annoying that it's persisted as long as it has. It's not interesting. It's just needs to end.
For me, if I'm not
this
hearing
old man yelling at the cloud,
grumble. Goddamn kids, get off my lawn.
Hey.
Speaking of old things, King of Fighters is an old series. Should we talk about that?
Look at this guy. This is crazy.
Speaking of old, my back is killing me. Also, King of Fighters is great.
Shit.
Hey, I'm trying with these segues.
You're good. You're doing good.
Should we get to reviews? Should we start? We have a lot to talk about tonight. Should we get to these?
Let's do it.
And yes.
Tim's probably going to talk about 25 minutes about King of Fighters because there's a lot to it.
Really?
Kind of, but kind of not also.
A lot of jiggle physics. First game to talk about tonight is the King of Fighters 15, developed and published by SNK Corporation, released February 17th on Xbox Series X and S, PS4, and PS5 for $59.99. Since its debut in 1994, the King of Fighters fighting game series has been the the world to the excitement with its appealing characters and unique game system. 6 years have passed since the last title in the series, and now King of Fighters 15 surpasses all of its predecessors in terms of graphics, systems, and online experience. Tim, tell us about your time with the King of Fighters.
Man, I didn't realize it had been that long. I have been out of the King of Fighters game for a long time. I mean, like, the last one I think I touched was 11, and that was on PS2. So, yeah. I'm mad this game doesn't have the little capoeira girl from King of Fighters 11. So, yeah, deny it. Done. Bye. No Momoko, no purchase.
Could be no, DLC. Anyway,
maybe. They announced some. Well, we'll get to that. Anyways, so, yeah, it's King of Fighters 15. And it's not a series that I've been following, so I'm just kind of taking this as it has come to me. And as I've heard, and kind of the rumbling that I've gotten is that they have used the 6 years wisely, I guess, since the last one. I think King of Fighters 14 wasn't particularly well received for various King of Fighters. Chat's hot tonight. I need to not look at it. It's going to distract me. But yeah, so this game, I've actually been following it quite a bit in its lead up. And so what we got here, it's King of Fighters. What this game is and what it has always been is, like, you have a large amount of characters. Like, back in the day, it was kind of mashing together characters from all different SNK fighting games, as there was a ton at the time, then adding in kind of its own cast on top of that. And they literally iterated on it every single year for like 10 years, just about, from 1995 or 94 was the first one up through like 2002. There was one every single year, and it just, you know, kept adding characters.
It was the Madden of its time.
Yeah. People used to joke about, I don't know, when's Street Fighter 3 going to come out at the time, because there were so many iterations of 2. And meanwhile, King of Fighters is just like, yep, here's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, just 1 every single year. And this is like the original team fighting game. It's not tag team fighting. It's just you pick a team, and that kind of has its own psychology that goes along with it. So this game, you got 39 characters, which is quite a bit of characters. Again, I've been following King of Fighters, so I'm going to make some statements that are probably too. Some characters have returned. Some characters have been left out. Some characters are brand new. The only one, there,
that
some
is
of those I know.
An all-encompassing statement there.
I know who Terry Bogard is. I know the Fatal Fury guys have been here. I know, like, the Ikari Warriors guys are still here. They've been in it for a long time. You know, King is still here. Vice is not here, who was one of my favorite characters. Not to be confused with the Tiger Head King from Tekken. And yeah, I don't know. They added a bunch in the middle. Some characters, I don't know how long some. I've heard that Shermie was gone for many iterations, and now she is back. I wouldn't know. But yeah, this game is very multiplayer focused. I will say that the single player offerings are not terribly robust. It's funny. The first thing on the menu, which is a very tall menu that pops up, is versus mode. Like, local versus is the first item on the menu, not even arcade or story mode. It is versus mode. And then there's story mode, which serves as like both the story and the arcade mode. There is elaborate lore to the King of Fighters series, so that is significant to some folks. And then there's training mode, and then there's like a whole bunch of options for multiplayer, but then there's the mission mode and your options and like some customization things down like the bottom. But the meat of this menu is the juicy center, where it's all of your ranked match, casual match, room matches, like online training mode stuff. Just all kinds of stuff to service you playing online. It's not even a very flashy menu. It is just there to be functional and get you into the game. Fortunately, this game has rollback netcode, which is the thing that everybody wants in their fighting games these days. It's the thing that makes fighting games work online. And it has it, and it feels really good, just like Guilty Gear Strive and Windjammers 2. Playing this game online feels pretty close to playing against someone right there on the couch next to you. There is, of course, like some hiccups. It's not completely flawless. Though in my experience, usually if it hiccups, it's like right at the beginning of a match, and then it's like totally fine. But yeah, plays good. I did not have trouble finding matches at like normal person hours. Sunday morning was not the hoppingest time on the King of Fighters servers, but go figure. If you're playing in prime time, it's like no problem finding matches. Once a match is over, you have the option to do an immediate rematch. And you can rematch, like, if one person each takes a game, then you can rematch a third time. Otherwise, you have to end the match. Or you could actually choose to do a room match and just take the person to a room and just keep fighting them. Which seems like a cool way to probably, like, make some friends playing this game online.
Yeah, if you have some close matches, take it to a room, keep going, and...
Yeah, and start, like, actually, you know, interacting with the person more.
Conversing outside of mother insults.
Yeah, exactly. That seems like it could be a good way to help foster community, and I like that. As far as the actual fighting goes, like I mentioned, there's 39 characters. They're arranged into 13 teams. You don't have to pick characters by teams, and no one is going to. You can mix and match as you so choose. You have a meter that builds up. Meter can be used for EX moves, which are like juiced up versions of your regular special moves, which is a thing that I think Street Fighter 4 started and several games have taken on since then. You, of course, have your super moves. There's this new crush. I forget what the actual name of it is, like some kind of crush art thing where you hit the guy and then they fly against the wall or they crumple down in front of you. It's just another, and it uses some meter to do that. And I think you get back, it uses a full meter and then you get back half of it, when they go down. But yeah, anyways, so it's kind of pretty straightforward fighting game stuff, but what makes King of Fighters King of Fighters is that there are teams, and you need to think about your team's composition and the order of which you arrange your team going into a fight and the kind of matchups that that presents. Like when you get matched up online, it shows your team and the enemy's team, and you have the option to rearrange like your team's order if you see like bad matchups or if you want to try something different. Like if, for example, you have a grappler in your lead slot, like somebody who needs to get up close and like grab the enemy, and your opponent's lead character is somebody who throws a lot of fireballs, you might want to switch somebody else into the lead slot or else you might have a bad time. It's also relevant for, you know, when you start a match, you have zero meter, and some characters can make better use of meter than others, so you might want to put characters towards the end of your rotation that can use that meter for much larger damage. And you want to put characters towards the front that can just kind of work without it. I started having a lot more success online when I was just like, okay, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to grab Terry Bogard. Good old Terry Bogard. I'm going to put him in the lead slot because I just know what I'm doing with him. I know his moves. I've played as Terry Bogard for 25 fucking years at least. And I don't need any fanciness to get through a match with Terry Bogard, and go figure, I started doing better. And then it's like, okay, now I'm saving my meter for later characters. I did not get to try out every single character, but there, I can just from the characters I did try out, there is just massive amounts of variety in their looks, their speed, their move sets. There's a lot of command grabs in this game, which is awesome because I like command grabs. There is a man who is the king of dinosaurs, who is a pro wrestler with a giant dinosaur head on him.
There's some pretty interesting characters in this game.
He may or may not be the king of dinosaurs may be to the griffin what Mr. America is to Hulk Hogan. Definitely not the same person, but similar perhaps. Seems the same. But yeah, so having those, you kind of have these basic fighting game things, but then you have 39 characters to mix and match, and that is where kind of the variety and the replayability and the customization all comes from, and it is significant, and it's a lot of fun. I found, like, just going online with a team that I think I can hang with, finding out I cannot hang with them at all. I mean, dude,
you tried.
I did try. I probably lost like my first 10 online matches. I was just getting absolutely shit stomped. But then it's like, okay, this character is not working at all. So I'm going to pull them out, put someone else in. Like, I love kicking dinosaurs, but I'm just not good enough with them right now. So I'm going to take him out, put somebody else in, move somebody here, then do this and this. And then it's like, okay, now I'm kind of, maybe it's because I lost my way to the bottom of the barrel, but, and maybe it's because I got a decent team together, but it's like, okay, now I'm actually winning a few matches and putting some wins on the board. And that feels good. And I think just in general, like, it feels maybe a little more beginner friendly. Like, there is a kind of auto combo if you just mash the light punch button, which will just do a quick little combo and then automatically activate a super, which is something I think like Dragon Ball FighterZ did as well. And also kind of annoys me because I don't mean to do it. And then I spend meter and I'm like, well, I guess I shouldn't have been mashing. And I think there's one for mashing on a heavy punch as well. But, like, the combo system seems pretty, I don't want to say simple, but it does seem like, okay, it's not that difficult to, like, string a combo together and start to see the opportunities where you can juggle characters. Or it's like, okay, this move bounces them off the wall. So if I bounce them off the wall, they're probably wide open if I pop a super right after that. And it's only just, like, chaining, like an EX move into a super move, but that's stuff that like I can see and I can figure out and perform. Like, I am not a fighting game expert. I am just someone who enjoys playing them and never has enough time to actually invest to become very good in. But I can see that stuff. And especially if like you're in a more casual group of people, I think you're going to have like a fantastic time just sitting down with like all these different characters and trying things out and just going ham with the game. But the most important thing, bottom line, is it plays well, there's lots of characters, and the netcode works. And that's really what you need for a fighting game to potentially flourish.
And it's got a great style. I love the character designs. I love the animations in the game. It's a really smooth-looking game. Mm-hmm. It's $60. What are your thoughts on it?
So my thoughts are, I mean, it's worth it so long as you are not going in with the expectation that you are going to be playing this game online. Because like I mentioned at the top, like, there is not a lot of just straight single player content to grind through. Like, there isn't like individual character story modes. There isn't just, I mean, unless you're going to like live your life in the mission mode. But it's like, no, you are buying this game to, you know, go into training, figure some stuff out, and then take your ass online and play against other people. And I mean, that is the meat and potatoes of a fighting game. But you know, if you're not into that, then
yeah, if you're looking for a single player experience, it's not really there.
No, but
more and more fighting game purists who like to just fight are gonna have a good time.
Yeah, but I think it's more accessible than like Guilty Gear, honestly. Even though I did get my shit pushed in right off the bat. You know, it's not, there is just a lot of mechanics in Guilty Gear, and what the mechanics here are like straightforward. It's just putting them all together, rather than mastering like crazy, you know, I don't know, everything that's going on in Guilty Gear, yeah. all your four different Roman cancels and reversals and shit.
The plus that this has over Guilty Gear is that it is also available on Xbox, because Guilty Gear is only on PlayStation.
Yeah, so, and that's a benefit for everybody, because I'm sure this game has crossplay, and the more people in the pool, the better.
Yeah.
And there is DLC on the way. They are adding characters from Mark of the Wolves, is I think next month, which is good, because I'm getting Jennet, who is my favorite character from Mark of the Wolves, but also Rock Howard's there, and Gato, and Geese Howard is coming to the game as well, of course. Geese Howard and Billy Kane and somebody else. I don't remember who's with them. So, yeah.
More characters on the way.
More characters on the way. Yeah.
All right, next up is Monarch, developed by Furyu Corporation, published by NIS America, released February 22nd on PS4, PS5, Switch, and PC for $59.99. Could you face yourself and the threats around you to save the ones you love? Shin Mikado Academy is engulfed in a madness-inducing mist, and only you can save everyone inside. Develop your ego to break the pact set by the pact bearers and dispel the corrupting mist. Purnell, tell us about your time with Monarch.
Okay, well, this game... the idea is generally the sense that your main character at the very beginning of the game, for reasons that you don't learn till later, is essentially knocked unconscious and near the onset of this supposed catastrophe. In this situation, he is granted powers by way of a monarch that allows him to form a pact, and he develops the ability to use ego powers and wield something that I'm not even making it was called a magic gear. It's like armor or some junk. And he also gets the ability to control puppets, which is something I'll bring up in a minute. Early on in the game, you are also tasked with taking a personality test that is granted to you by basically an entity mentioned that takes the form of your school dean. You answer a bunch of questions, and based on those questions, you'll get rated amongst the different... I guess seven deadly sins, and depending on which one you rate the best at or the highest in, you will get one of those dolls I mentioned before. It's like a skeleton, essentially. And it works kind of like another party member, but it doesn't have a personality or soul or anything. It does have a voice, but you don't interact with it. It's just basically there for like being another party member. But once that whole thing is done and you're back in the main game, you are put into the gameplay loop of being trapped inside the school that is engulfed in a giant shield, surrounded by a giant shield so you can't get out, and there is madness-inducing mist, like you mentioned, that's causing people to go crazy if they get caught in it for too long. Old-school fans of Megaton games, most notably Shin Megami Tensei IF and Persona 1 Snow Queen Quest, will probably take a lot of familiarity with this concept because it's pretty much the literal concept of those specifically those games. Trapped in a school with the seven deadly sins, you know, influencing, you know, the evils of the environment, and you have to take those evils down. But I'm okay with that because that was a large part of what drew me to this in the first friggin' place, and possibly you too. So how does this whole thing play out though? Well, you're exploring different buildings of the school, and the way to defeat these pact bearers who are influenced by these sins or whatever, get their power from crystals, three to be exact. And the crystals themselves are pretty much hidden in various areas of the school. Say, for example, the first year student dorm rooms or dorm building. You have to traverse floor after floor, each one covered in mist, to find a collection of cell phones that give off a signal, which you can then utilize to call and be transported to the demon world. I'm not making that up. And when you are there, one of these crystals exists, and you have to pretty much smash it in order to get yourself one step closer to fighting the pack bearer and taking them out. And that is generally the loop. You find a crystal, you smash it. After you smash the crystal, some story elements occur. You go to the next one, next floor, do it again. But the only thing that kind of breaks it up is like as you're exploring a floor, you are walking around in the mist, and there is a madness gauge that your character is associated with. And the longer you spend in the mist, slowly and surely it clicks up. And once it hits 100%, you go crazy. If you're outside of the battle anyway, you go crazy and you get kicked back to the school infirmary and have to do it again. But if it happens in battle, you go absolutely bonkers. And I'll describe battle in a second, too. I don't think I just forgot about that. I just get jumpy. If your madness exceeds 100 in a battle, you'll go crazy, get an extreme power boost, but you'll attack anybody that's near you, regardless of who is friend or foe, and then eventually you'll pass out.
You just go berserk.
You go berserk until you die. But by that same token, there's another element to this, which I guess I'll talk about when I really get into the battle system, which I guess I'll do now. So how does the battles themselves work? Well, as you are looking around these buildings to look for these crystals, there will be a few scenarios where you'll be making these cell phone calls to go to the demon world, whether it be to turn off death calls, which is an element that allows people that are already influenced by the mist to go crazy and stalk you. And if they catch you, they immediately turn you to 100% madness and kick you out. But you can ultimately go in and initiate a battle immediately instead of running around with this death call by going to the demon world with a phone number that NPC gives you. And that's one of the main ways you get into combat. And once this happens, you go to like a sort of astral plane where you can have up to four characters on the board. Usually it's going to revolve around you, one of the human characters you meet in the game, and two of the dolls, because you'll get more dolls as you play through the game. And rather than be grid-based movement, it's a sort of like how Phantom Brave did it, where it's like a circular movement range based on your movement distance, and you just kind of run anywhere within that circle. And when you get into a position where you want to do an attack, you have two types of attacks. Arts, which are physical attacks that take hit points to do, or cost you hit points to do, and authority, attacks that work, but in exchange for increasing your madness. If you do these attacks, there you go. You pretty much pull that stuff off. If another party member is nearby, you can get them to kind of go in with you on an assist if you use an art attack. So you can kind of dogpile on enemies that way to give you more damage per person, like basically maximize your turns. And you can also do something which I really like about this game. There's a deferment command. So you can say, hey, this character doesn't really have a motive or nothing. I have nothing really planned for this character this turn. So instead of making them waste their turn, I'm going to defer their turn to someone else. So you can pass their turn over to somebody else in exchange for increasing their madness by like 25%. So it's a risk versus reward, which I kind of like, because quite frankly, everybody's going to get deferred when I can help it. I just want to move across the board as fast as I can and wipe things out, because usually you're either trying to kill all the enemies on the board or destroy a singular object on the board to end the map or whatever. In addition to the madness I mentioned before, I mentioned there's like another element in the game too, and that's called awakening status. That is another metric which I barely ever utilize, but if you can get that to 100% at the same time your madness gets to 100%, you enter awakened state, which is essentially all the benefits of madness without the loss of control and the eventual death. But pulling that off, good fucking luck. But if you want to make that gamble, you're welcome to it. I'm not bothered. I've mainly focused on using attacks that got stronger when I got mad. And then after getting mad to an extent and using those attacks, I used items to reduce my madness. It's a smart play. You know, it's how to get things done. The thing about it, it's weird about this game is that at the core, I like the concept. I like the narrative that plays out as the characters start to interact with each other, though I do wish that the characters stayed together for longer instead of making you work with one at a time and then just kind of having dolls fill the spots. I mean, I kind of get why. Creates more personal stories for chapters, but, you know, I don't want dolls. I want people. But the other elements about this game, the things that I'll mention one more thing I liked, and then I'll talk about the other stuff that I wasn't too fond of. Leveling up in this game isn't done traditionally. Normally in games, you fight a bunch of enemies, and you kill them, you get experience points, and then in turn you level up. In this game, it doesn't happen. Instead, you get a spirit currency, which you earn by winning battles, and also you find it hidden across maps and junk like that. And you can spend this spirit on either items at the shop being run by the same NPC I mentioned that gives you phone numbers. And you can also spend that spirit on learning skills. Every character has a skill tree. You spend the spirit to do that. And every time you buy a skill, the character levels up. Every time you expand on a skill's ability and potential, that character levels up. So rather than worry about EXP gauges, you're instead just, banking a bunch of spirit and then go, okay, of the characters I got, what do I want to do? Who do I want to give this to in order to level them up and get them new skills? And an interesting follow-up to that is that in a lot of games with skill trees, you'll be like, well, I don't want to buy that skill because it seems pretty stupid. I'll never use it. In this game, though, since skill learning is attributed to leveling up, you'll instead be like, that skill's kind of sucky, but it only costs 10 points. So 10 points for a free level for a level up is pretty good. I'm going to just buy it and never use it, which is fine by me, because that's pretty much how I ended up doing a lot of this. So I just wanted to level people up, so I just bought useless skills while still focusing on the ones I cared the most about. So that's how leveling up and getting stronger in this game works. The only downside to that, of course, is that characters come in at level 1. So if you're doing, razzle dazzle time and you get a new character who comes in like a turd, you got to either have the, spirit points banked up, or you got to just kind of farm for it. Though fortunately, if you don't want to farm and you just want to lose a little bit of progress, you can actually refresh your stats and lose. You get 80% of the spirit you spent back on a character
and you can redistribute it. So you can be like, hey, my guy's level 10, new guy comes in. Okay, I'm going to level myself back down to 1, but then split the difference between the two characters. You can do that, but otherwise you're going to be grinding and leveling up. Now, the downside stuff. Every enemy, aside from the boss in each area, is essentially one of the dolls I mentioned before. So just like the dolls you get, that's what you're fighting to. So it's just these skeletons that get armor bits that augment their skills and stats to make them look slightly different from each other. But they're essentially skeletons all the time. Short, small, or short, tall, doesn't freaking matter. They're all skeletons. They're all assholes. And they get kind of boring. The combat itself is awesome. I personally like it. But I don't like the fact that the enemy's styling gets pretty bland early on. Like, it feels like a cheap cop-out. They could have gotten a little bit more diverse with these things. Hell, give them different colors. I don't know. Red skeleton, blue skeleton. I'd have been happy with that, at least. But they really do look fairly similar to each other. Aside from that, the other thing is that the environments are pretty bland, which is funny because they're authentic to the style of the environment you're in. You're running around a Japanese high school. So anybody who's seen like a video of Japanese high schools knows that they are designed to look pretty samey. Long hallways with nothing distinct in them except for maybe like a cork board or whatever. Two doors on each side of a classroom. So you're going from the back edge to the front. That kind of thing. Desks lined up in even rows. Pretty much every room in this game is going to look like that. Hallway, room. Hallway, room. And the environments get kind of bland. I mean, you'll go to a library here and there. You'll go to like a cafeteria here and there. You'll go to different rooms. But for the most part, you're just exploring the same old stuff. And that also gets kind of tired. So if you're the type of person who needs variety in your experience and the scenery and the atmosphere, look elsewhere. Even the demon world's kind of samey like that. You'll get transported over. It's just this flat surface with some wacky imagery on the outer skirts. But then where you're at is just flat surface and maybe a wall or two that you can blow up or, you know, but nothing that really excites you. Nothing that makes you go, whoa, this looks really different. Icy floors, not in this game. Lava plates, not in this game. There are some objects, of course, that will augment gameplay, like, you know, healing tiles and exploding tiles. But for the most part, again, it looks very samey. All in all, I have been looking around the net because when I was originally playing, I was curious about what other people thought of this game too. And it's taken a bit of a heavy hit from the internet masses.
Has it?
And while people are ragging on this game in a lot of ways. I will go so far to say, I don't think it's definitely not hot shit, especially in the current era where it's like, there's way too many games right now popping off in this month alone. It's very hard to give this like a full on, go and get it right now. But if you're okay with the themes and the detriments that I mentioned, you know, the samey, you know, enemies and stuff like that, the game really isn't bad. And the themes for the narrative are actually pretty interesting, too. They go hard in some of these chapters. Some pretty, you know, not too happy-go-lucky stuff. You know, teen murders and suicides and no thank you.
Happy stuff.
Yeah, all kinds of – it's rough. It gets pretty rough. But I'm okay with that. I personally prefer in games that will go for the gut and everything's not just, we're going to go save the village from the orcs who ate all of our apples because apples are good and nourishing or whatever. I like games that go for the gut, and I'm okay with that.
I don't know what the apple thing – anyway, I can't stop laughing that Chris referred to this as like Jeff Dunham, the game.
As what?
Jeff Dunham that you're
Who's
playing?
Jeff Dunham?
The guy with the puppets.
I made that joke like 40 minutes ago.
I know, and I'm still laughing about it.
We didn't want to interrupt Purnell.
I can't Jeff interrupt Purnell. Jeff.
I could have interrupted Purnell earlier when I had decided to maybe unmute to laugh at the fact that he said turd, which I'm not proud of. I'm experimenting with muting while people's reviews are going, but then you guys don't get to hear my laugh. So I'm going to record each of my LOL moments at the end of the show.
Hey, if I can make someone laugh at my turd notions, I'll take it. Everybody does a little laugh at some toilet humor here and there.
No, yeah, we need a section at the end of every episode, just a super cut of Brooke laughing.
That requires effort and editing, and I just don't have the time for that shit. Monarch is $60. What do you think, Purnell?
I'd give it a personal try, though. With that in mind, I'm also going to be – this is one of those rare times where I'm going to say, because I don't want anybody coming back at me and going, you son of a bitch. Maybe look for getting it a little cheaper. Don't get it on the full launch price or whatever. But I do feel as though – there is good times to be had in this game. It's just a matter of how much you value that good time monetarily. Yeah. So at least it gets to try it.
All right, works for me. Next game is River City Girls Zero, developed by WayForward and Limited Run Games, published by WayForward. Released February 14th on the Switch for $14.99, coming later this spring to Xbox, PlayStation, and PC. See how the River City Girls story began with the 16-bit retro rumble. Tim, tell us about River City Girls Zero.
Oh, boy. All right. Yeah, this is a first time ever that this game is coming to North America. So they did the work of bringing it over here, doing all the work of localizing it and putting it here in front of us. Just keep in mind that this is an old Super Nintendo game, which still I was very excited to see coming out over here because I am a massive River City fan, as you may or may not know.
Yeah, I heard. Once upon a time, I heard that you liked the game.
I may have liked the game a lot. but what they've done here, something really cool is right off the bat, they have added in like some there's an animated cutscene like even before you even get to the title screen, and then once you actually get into the game, they've added like a manga cutscene like the ones they had in River City Girls to this game, which is basically the eponymous River City Girls which I'm blanking on the names, Misako and Kyoku's, I think, is the other one. They in a very meta fashion find the old cartridge of the game that they are in, and yes, the new one does have another banger. A couple bangers, by the way. So yes, big yes on that. So yeah, and I think that's really cool that they went through this effort of like, slipping it into the evolving River City Girls canon and tying it back into the original River City Girls game from a couple years ago. Now, as far as what they have done with the game itself, other than that, they actually have two translations that they've done. One is literal, one is more localized. I was using the new translation, the more adapted for a North American one. I guess the more literal one has some less kind terms for women involved in it, and some more crass things when translated literally from Japanese, but they're both there, and that's good and fine and welcome. It has English and Japanese voiceover for this is for the like the manga scenes that they added in there, and then kind of like some stuff that you tend to expect from these types of releases, where it's like, okay, you know, this game was released in 4x3, you can adjust it so it has takes on some different proportions. Like it's I used it to so it's 4x3, but it fits the screens, but they do have like the native and it's like a much smaller little screen on there, and they have it stretched to widescreen, which, you know, I never use. It's like a CRT filter. They don't have like multiple save state slots on it, and you know, when you are saving the game, you just hit save and quit and it saves it and you quit out. The original game had a password system, and the passwords do function, which I found out because I made the game like freeze. I don't know if I made it happen, but it happened. I don't think I made it happen. I think it's the game's fault. Let's go with that. Where it was like Kyoko was supposed to show up in like a little in-game story cutscene, and then the game just froze and she never appeared and the game didn't move forward. And I'm like, okay. And my only, like, I couldn't, like, reload my save state. I had to actually, like, use the password to load back up to the beginning of the fight that I just cleared. And I was like, great. Yay.
Damn.
So, yeah, that was a weird thing. So now the game itself. So this game's not very good.
No.
No, it's not. It's not very good at all. And it's not really, it's much more of a Double Dragon game than a River City game, or at least when I think River City, what I expect is kind of a more open city area to run around with and shops and like character progression and upgrades, and I guess a bit more of a better combat system. And this game doesn't have any of that shit. It is straight linear. There is no open city to wander around in. There is no shops. There is no character progression. Kind of what the game hangs its hat on is just that you can switch between four characters on the fly, that being Ricky and Kunio and Kyoko and Misaku. Wow, I butchered that. holy shit, that came out wrong. You can flip between them with the tap of a button. But kind of I figured out the other edge of that sword, like, yes, you can switch between four characters, is that, like, the game will only produce two enemies on the screen at a time. Always, constantly. It's just like two guys, two guys, two guys, two guys, two guys, two guys. That's it. Because it can't handle more characters in memory, because it's hanging out with your entire party back there before you call them out. Your characters themselves, they do have some different movements and hitboxes. Like, you have your basic punch combo, a basic kick combo. You can jump and kick. You can run. I figured out that if you hold down the block button and hit a button, like, each character has specials assigned to all of the four face buttons, which have different properties. You have a back attack that is a straight up button. But, you know, none of it feels great. It's very stiff. Like, these are taller character sprites than generally what you see in River City games. And, like, it's tough to, like, really hit a good combo on characters without just getting interrupted. Like, there's not really any stun on enemies when you're punching them in the face and they will just punch you back. You are, like, there is some, I guess, kind of neat moments, like, the just interesting areas you go through with, like, oh, and this, you're going up a building that is, like, kind of falling apart, so, like, the floor is, like, falling down below you, and then it'll be at a weird angle, and there's, like, another stage where you're jumping over a Ferris wheel, but for the most part, it's just going from one side of the screen to the other side of the screen, just punching two guys, like, knocking them out, and then moving on. There is a motorcycle, a Mode 70 motorcycle chase sequence, which is also not, like, great. It just none of it plays very well. I think I may have actually downloaded a ROM of this, like, way back in the day, and, like, played through the initial prison fight and been like, oh, this doesn't feel that great. Maybe not this one. It is what it is. Yeah. You know, it's a matter of, you know, bringing this game over and localizing it for people and having it available, which is cool. But unless you're, like, a complete psychopath for the series like me, you probably don't really want to buy it. Like, if you really loved the original River City Girls, like, this is not that. But what you should definitely do still is go and check out the new Megan McDuffie tracks, because that stuff is awesome. And still very good. That is literally the best part of the game, because the game itself is definitely not.
The game is asking $15. What do you think?
No. You shouldn't get this unless you're
save your money and buy the soundtrack instead.
Yeah, get the little soundtrack. I mean, like, I'm enough of a I didn't enjoy this, and I'm still, like, enough of a freak show that I'm thinking of getting, like, the $150 limited run version that has, like, action figures of the girls in it, just to have the action figures of the girls. And I haven't decided I'm not doing it yet, but I probably shouldn't. I really probably
shouldn't. Well, they're going up in price on eBay, so.
Well, these are still available. If you do want to buy this game, you do want a physical version of this to add to your collection, it is still open. They're taking pre-orders for another few weeks for the Switch version. And the PS4 version as well, I believe. So, yeah.
Cool.
And PS4 All right. And PS5. Yeah. So, yeah, it's we complain about this from time to time, but no, the orders are actually still open for this one.
That's good. All right. Well, that is it for you, Tim. I don't know. Anything else?
Well, I'm going to catch up on this Dragon Age conversation that was distracting me while I was yakking. those little giggly laughs. You'll remember last week when we were talking about Wii U games and things that were going about to be lost in the ether, and I was talking about Tekken Tag Tournament 2. And now, just today, I received in the mail a copy of Tekken Tag Tournament 2 Wii U edition.
Nice.
Amazing.
Which I did grab because I saw it wasn't nice. as nearly as ungodly expensive as it was like 6 months ago when I looked into it.
I bought me a copy of Game & Wario because I was like, I don't want to be kept from having all of the WarioWares.
Yeah.
And that's by far the most expensive.
Yeah, it is. Yes, it is.
What the hell happened that game is like worth money? Why?
I have no idea. Nobody cared about it. Like,
yeah.
Arguably, nobody still cares about it. It's just like somebody out there just like charged $150 on it for eBay at some point. Maybe it was like the only listing, so like every other person was like, "Oh, I've got that game. I'm going to charge $150 for it."
Yeah,
how it goes sometimes.
Yeah. Pardon.
All right. Well, all right. Tim, do you have any final words?
No, that was my final word. My final word is about that. That's a good one. God damn it.
Good night, Tim.
Not even an excuse me.
Good night. No, not even.
Good night. I'm going to need this.
Are you drunk yet, Brooke?
Not yet, but I'm getting there.
Are you working on it?
Working on it. Going to miss Tim, though. Night, night, Tim.
I'm going to need the hooch. But this one.
All right. Well,
she drinks to forget.
We all do. We all do.
About Tim.
About Tim.
Next game to talk about is Gem Wizards Tactics, developed by Keith Bergen Games, published by Red Deer Games, released February 18th on Xbox One and Switch for $12.99. Lead fantasy army and turn-based warfare with randomly generated maps and complex battle mechanics that can be combined to clash enemy in war over powerful Omni-Gem. Pernell, what is Gem Wizards Tactics?
Okay, so Gem Wizards Tactics is pretty much a turn-based tactical strategy game. I was going to say RPG, but I was like, wait a minute, this isn't a damn RPG. Tactical game. So essentially the idea is that battles take place on hex grids, which I love, and I wish more companies would go back to hex grids. They're so much better than squares. But in this sense, you are tasked with pretty much on any board you play in this game. So I can just go with the general flow because the gameplay never changes. It's just scenarios. You're generally tasked with either like taking out an entire army, like killing enemies, or capturing specific locations, like how Advanced Wars did it, where you would like take over like a building. And the way you would take over buildings is by getting a unit onto the building, passing a turn, and then on the next turn, starting on the facility and then capturing it. The way the gameplay works, however, I feel like this is where things get interesting for this game. And that is because two things. One, the types of factions in the game, they're fairly interesting as far as how they operate. Like, they're not your typical orcs or wizards or whatever. Like, the two that I like the most, as far as I recall, was like the Potato Act, which is like an army of potatoes. and then another army being the Business Demons, which is a bunch of demons in business suits. And of course, each of those has like multiple unit types. So it's not just simply a bunch of demons in suits. It's a variety of these. Like there's like a one demon in the Business Demon army is like a flame throwing guy that has a jetpack so he can bounce around the map. Which leads me to the second thing I liked about this game as far as like what I was playing with it. And that is that the abilities in this game are kind of all over the place. And they all kind of have their own bits of synergy if you put them together properly. Many of the abilities in this game are related to like terraforming, in the sense that you might have a guy that burns down trees. You might have a guy that plants trees. You might have a guy that puts down water. You might have a guy that freezes water, or just creates icy terrain in and of itself. And then there's units that can like say get on that terrain to get further bolster for strength or get hit point healings and things of that nature. Put down some landmines and just whatever. So you end up doing a lot of that kind of thing. So there's a few modes in this game, and this is when I'm going to finally get to the mode stuff. There's a story mode, which I'll be honest, I wasn't too big on the story. It was kind of like, yeah. It's good that it gives you that direction, though. It's like saying, hey, here's a narrative. You can play from the beginning to the end, and it introduces you to some different characters that exist within the narrative as a whole. And that was pretty much where I spent most of my time anyway. But then there's also the campaign, and this is where I find things to be most interesting in the sense where it's like you choose one of the orders that I mentioned before, and you have to go across a map of 10 different locations. again, each location is randomly generated, so you're strategizing on the fly. And like I said before, battles are pretty much a matter of, like, you know, taking over a facility or defeating all the enemies. The one thing I forgot to mention, which I think is pretty cool, is that it's not just killing enemies in this game. You can also defeat enemies by pushing them off the map. There are a lot of, you know, unit abilities that result in you moving enemies around the board. And if you happen to push one off the edge of the map, that counts as killing them. So if you come across a unit that's, like, a little more powerful than you want, you can lure them to the edge, push them one step closer, and then they will break. Yeah, I did that.
Proud of you.
I know. But as you're playing on these maps, every once in a while, you'll come across a distressed unit. And this unit can be from any of the factions, so it's not like you're limited to only units within your personal faction. And if you come across one of these units, you can recruit them if you get to them and rescue them. And then they become a unit that can run along with you in your combat party. Downside to that, of course, if a unit dies in combat, they stay dead. So if you move through the campaign, that unit stays gone. And if you run out of units, you lose the campaign. So in between levels, or rather during levels in the campaign, you will come across the occasional treasure chest on the map. And if you take it and then beat the level, you can open the chest back at your campaign hub and we'll give you equipment that you can use to equip with your various characters. It can do simple things like give you more attack power at the cost of defense. But there's a couple of cool things I came across too. Most notably was one where if you jump on an enemy, you get hit points instead of doing damage to them, which is interesting because not every unit can jump, but it was perfect for that rocket guy that I told you about, the flamethrower with the rocket jump. They'll just rocket jump onto a guy, stomp him like Mario and get hit points back, which is kind of nice. And then aside from the treasure chest thing in between campaigns, you can also recruit one new free unit between, you know, chapters, and you can spend money to recruit new units. Now, trying to get to the stuff that roughed me up, because I guess I should name a few good things I like before that. I like the graphic style. I like the humor to the game. I like the unit variety, and I like the unit skills and their synergies to each other. And I think the music is great as well. Things that were giving me grief, though, which I think he can honestly fix, or he might just be like, no, Pernell, you're a freaking goofball. You just can't read, and it's right there, or whatever. And that is that the interface in the caravan was driving me crazy. There are like these four objects on the right hand side. There's like a punching bag, there's like a cube, which it looks like it could be like a healing cross. I can't really tell. There's like two things that can either be two beds or two pieces of tofu, and then there's like a Super Nintendo controller with a star above it. And when you scroll over those things, the game doesn't tell you what they are. It just has a price tag on it. And then, so I guess you can spend the money on it and hope for the best. But it never tells you what those things do. Fortunately, though, when you hover over a unit type, it does tell you what the unit does, like what its skills are. You can scroll through and see what its values are and then decide if you want to buy it or not. But I was generally having a fair number of issues with that, with actually navigating the caravan interface. It's not that it's not readable, aside from those four squares I talked about before. It's just that it feels cumbersome. Like, it's not like a smooth transition. Thankfully, though, the touchscreen is a thing that is an effect in this game. If you finally just give up on using any of the buttons, you can tap a number of things in the game, which is nice. But even still, to have button option on here and not be able to properly really get around using it, it's kind of an annoyance, and I didn't like that. Yeah. In addition to that, this works. I mean, this could also be a matter of just me being old and cumbersome or whatever, but when on the maps proper, I was having, even now, for as much as I've put into the game, I have these moments where I'm like, okay, I want to move my guy, and now when he's an attack, oh, crap, I got to back out because I can't make it properly transition from moving the guy to doing an attack. So it's like, you know what I'm talking about. Like, if you play Final Fantasy Tactics, because I'm naming that because, like, the granddaddy that everyone knows, it's a very smooth flow of moving a guy into position, selecting an ability, using the ability, switching between guys, doing it over and over. Like, even from the moment I bought that game and booted it up, I had no issue determining how to do things. I didn't even need a tutorial. It was like, okay, there's like new guys, minions, whatever. Something about this game, because it has you jumping between the thumbstick, the cross pad buttons, and then the triggers, which are okay. The triggers are for jumping between units. I like that. That's how it should always be. But something about how you transition between making moves and setting actions and stuff like that, it just never quite gelled with me. And that could be a me problem, not a world problem. But I wanted to point that out again. Maybe the guy's listening. He's like, you know, Pernell, you seem to like the rest of the game. So here's the niggling that you can resolve and you'll be fine with this part here. But for me, that gave me a lot of crap. Some people might feel conflicted with the fact that the maps aren't static, you know, because when a map is static, you can develop a strategy for a board or whatever. But in this game, everything's random. So you're kind of coming in, you know, blind, and you just got to make the best out of what you get, which isn't a bad thing. I feel like that's fucking tactical. Here's the map. Work with it. But I know some people aren't too fond of it, so I needed to point that out. All in all, I genuinely do feel like the game is decent. Like, it's not a bad game. And if anybody listened to my review and was like, he hates that game, were you listening to what I was saying? Because I don't think it's a bad game. I just have some niggling gripes with the interface and the utilization of it. But I love the unit designs. I love the unit attacks and abilities. I love the fact that you can rank up by doing a number of different little tasks to unlock like new classes for the campaign mode. And there's a fair number of campaign classes too. So you can come back and forth and kind of have like new, you know, starting regimens to kind of play around with and have fun with. It's just knowing the fact that everything's random and you're just kind of working with whatever RNG is in place for your particular run through the campaign. But it's a decent game and I can honestly recommend people play it.
All right. Well, we got to talk price on this one. I initially said it was $12.99, and it is $12.99 on the Switch. On Xbox, it's $6.99.
Whoa! This damn.
Yeah, well, but on top of that, it's on sale. It's on sale on Xbox for $5.59. It's on sale on the Switch right now for $1.99.
Jesus! When that was if you're hearing this and the sale's still running,
buy it.
Definitely buy it. That is a legit buy. I mean, what I got, this is totally worth both of those prices. No question about that. If you are coming at it with the full price tag on the Switch, it might be more of a try in that regard. But at the prices you just named to me, there's literally no reason not to buy it. It was on my wish list already. I was planning to buy it myself when the game became available. It just happened to be coincidental that a review code came through to me. But honestly, I think the game is a solid, at least try it, but with the price you named, buy the damn thing. It's worth it.
Cool. All right. Next game is Time Rift, developed by Light Shards, published by Abiding Bridge and IndieArk, released February 17th on Steam for $9.99. Time Rift is a fast-paced puzzle shooter. You're a hacker-turned-security tester, but your skills will only get you so far. To take down global megacorp Vault Co., you'll have to manipulate the flow of time. Chris, tell us about your time with Time Rift.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, I know. It's terrible.
That's okay. We're all about puns and wordplay today. So, Time Rift. So this is a game that is functionally a puzzle shooter, but it's kind of like its own thing. I mean, it's very definitely like a puzzle game. So the idea behind it is that you are a hacksaw, to borrow the the language of the 90s. And I was trying to remember a fancy word, but I couldn't do it. And thank you. I'm going to get distracted by trying to think of that word.
Leet?
No. Leet, well, yes. Hacksaw. That is part of it. I want to say purview, but it's not that. It's not purview. Parlance. The parlance of the 90s. Yes. All right. Review over. No.
$10. What do you say?
Yeah. Didn't unmute in time to laugh, but the laugh happened.
So you play as a hacksaw, to borrow the parlance of the 90s, and you are running through security systems trying to leet hack some codes or something. I don't know. But there's a British lady who's like kind of reading a script about the soulless corporation that you work for, where you're a former. There's actually story in this game, which is kind of great because, you know, like usually these games that have like dozens of puzzle rooms and stuff, and like that's kind of all they are. Yeah. But this one actually, I'll get to it in a minute, but it actually does like start off with some plot, kind of given by the narrator, who is like basically your tutorial lady. And, so you're instructed to basically get from one end of a kind of tunnel to, or a maze, I guess you could say, to the other, and that's how you pass the stage. So the thing about it is that you have a firewall, literal firewall, persistently chasing you. So you have to, like, you have to move fast. So the thing is that you are pointing in one direction. Your character is just a little triangle, like think Asteroids or Geometry Wars or something. And in order to, it's not a twin stick shooter, it's a one stick shooter, in that you basically have to find a directional button on the ground and run over it in order to change your direction. So like, you know, that they construct the mazes to basically be like, well, I got to go up in order to get over here, but I'm like, you know, I need to be facing up, but I'm facing right, so I need to find the up arrow. And then a few levels later, they introduce, like, the actual shooting part, which is mostly shooting, like, things that are inanimate, such as walls. But the thing is, you have to be pointing in the right direction to shoot a wall. So, again, you have to find these directional buttons. And then several levels later, they make it to where the directional buttons are only one use. So then you have to, like, plan on which one you're going to use at what time. So then you're suddenly playing, like, you know, 4D chess and stuff, like trying to figure out, like, all the moves to get to the end of the stage. Eventually they introduce, like, enemy turrets where you have to shoot through bullets. They, you know, they bring out, like, all kinds of stuff, like, regularly. Like, every two or three levels, there's a new mechanic that you gotta, you know, figure out. And they'll, like, build some stages around it. And some of them are real clever. But kind of keeping this from becoming one of those situations where it's, like, you just die a thousand deaths and, like, you know, every single stage while trying to learn it, they did away with that. And they just straight up give you time travel. So if you feel like you've made a mistake, you can just rewind all the way back to the beginning of the stage if you like. You can actually, you know, say you turn the wrong direction, you wasted a floor arrow, or you just didn't make it in time. Just rewind until you feel like you're in a comfortable spot, just like, you know, like the modern retro re-releases have, you know, just rewind until you get good. The cool thing is that this time travel actually is itself a puzzle. Because certain walls you can blast through, but those walls will stay broken no matter what time you're in. So you break them and then travel back in time and they're still broken. And so that gets woven into, like, the puzzles as well. So, yeah, they just stack all kinds of cool stuff in it. And so, you know, just when you're, like, playing, you know, and again, when you change directions and stuff too, it resets the firewall. So, like, that's also a thing, is, like, doing the timing of, like, keeping that firewall away from you. And the cool thing is that on top of all this fast action, it's like once you start to get into the story, like the narrator starts to break character and starts to go off script and she like starts to kind of become a friend. Even though your character never talks, like you have no dialogue. But you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, she's starting to be more friendly to you, and then you start getting mysterious messages in the stages. You get somebody who's like, oh, I've disabled the firewall for this stage, and they have, like, code names and all this stuff. And so there are certain stages where you get to talk to basically your coworkers, but everyone is, like, kind of sworn to anonymity in this company, so, like, you don't know who they are, but they're trying to help you, and they're trying to uncover something that the corporation is doing. So then you basically get to kind of go into this series of stages where there's no firewall and they're harder puzzles because there's no timer. I mean, there is a timer, but it's just for score. It's not for, you know, it's not counting down. It's counting up.
Yeah.
But like you get to go through these other levels that are also puzzles where just on straight up on the floor, you get like text messages from like your coworkers and stuff, like kind of, you know, basically like kind of going all clandestine and like, you know, secret about like about everything. And so, yeah, like, you know, many, many levels into this game, like this plot starts happening and you're like, oh, wow, this is actually a lot deeper than just trying to get my little triangle through the place. And yeah, so it was a really interesting ride that I was not expecting when I first started playing it. I was like, oh, this is just going to be like 100 floors or whatever, and we're just going to I'm just going to play it until it's too hard and then I'm going to stop playing it. It actually, funny enough, it did get hard, but the game had such a good like curve that I just got good at it, like kind of automatically. Like I was just like naturally starting to do like really cool stuff, and I was like, wow, okay, so this game like it's like complicated, but it, you know, it slows you. It like brings you into it like so like carefully that like, you know, by the time it does start getting hard, like you're hanging with it.
It's not often you see a game with a really solid difficulty curve. Usually it's all over the place, but sounds like this one just really nails it.
Yeah, I was surprised given like the price tag and like the kind of indie nature of it, and just the fact that, you know, like the stage coloring is like Elgato Core, like, you know, purple and blue, and like the soundtrack is like the synthwave stuff, and so I was like, okay, so, you know, I was expecting something that was just like a lot of other stuff I've played, but no, this one actually kind of stands out, but you got to give it a little bit of a chance.
Cool. Well, $10, what do you say?
Yeah, I think this one has a potential to be like kind of a hidden classic. So I say go ahead and get your hands on this one and enjoy it. You're not gonna be like, you know, cursing the sky in frustration at it. So that's kind of nice, because that's a hallmark characteristic of like this type of game. I think if you're like me, you'll get drawn in by the story and you'll want to see more. So yeah, it's a buy it from me.
Awesome. All right, next up is Beat Souls, developed by Zoob Corporation and East Asia Soft, published by East Asia Soft, released February 16th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $9.99. Music and intense action gameplay collide in Beat Souls, a high-speed rhythm game where you must avoid obstacles and collect spirits to rack up stylish combos on your way to the high score. Pernell, tell us about your time with Beat Souls.
Okay, so Beat Souls is a game where you control one of four different avatars. You start out with one character named Mikoto, but eventually you can unlock four other ones that go by the names of Mai, Nene, and Rinko. They are all basically the boss. Those three are basically the boss characters of the game. there are a total of 45 songs in the game. The way you access them is, well, I guess by selecting them from the main menu. Oh, that was easy. But once you select a stage and you enter the gameplay mechanic, the main beat is that music is playing at a certain BPM. And as the board is scrolling, because you're at the bottom of the screen and the board is scrolling towards you. And as the board is scrolling, you have two souls, one on the left side of your body and one on the right side of your body. And you are in the base of the souls are like of the yellow color. You are maneuvering this character with the two souls surrounding them across five different lanes. And as the screen is scrolling, a few things will show up in your peripheral view that you have to either avoid or collect. They are purple walls, and those will definitely need to be avoided. Walk around them or step around them so that when the screen scrolls, they scroll past you, you can cut back around them. In addition to that, there are these little like chompy teeth on the floor. When you see those, you want to jump over those by pressing the jump button. Then lastly, there are actual souls. Beat Souls. Huh. I said the name of the game is right there. what those are is that's how you pretty much score your points, because you need to make it so that when the screen scrolls by, the two souls that are on your sides actually overlap the souls that are scrolling past you. If you press no additional buttons, it's one to your left and one to your right. So if you see two that are positioned that way, you want to make your character be in the middle lane between the two, so you collect them together. If they are both on the same side of your character, you can press the right bumper or left bumper to move both spirits to that side of the screen, so that you can pretty much grab them in that manner. And then in addition, sometimes the spirits aren't orange or yellow, sometimes they're blue. And there's a button that you can press to turn the spirits from yellow to blue. And then you want to make sure that the blue spirits overlap the yellow ones. So dodge, jump, grab, pass left to right, and change the color to grab. Those are the mechanics that are at your disposal to make the gameplay complicated basically the patterns get more complicated, the speeds get faster on the BPMs for the songs, and what have you. So honestly, the mechanic of the game is fun. Like, I enjoy playing the game. It's a fun mechanic. It's, you know, and as you get to the harder stuff, you unlock hell mode or whatnot, you start to get the tension. Like, oh, crap, gotta dodge, gotta grab, gotta move. And then overlapping all those different play mechanics can get challenging. The hiccup I find for the game, though, this is a Pernell purely subjective, is the music isn't all that static. Like, it's kind of like, you know, this track's okay. Like, passable track, this one, but nothing that really goes, yeah, this is what I'm here for. And all but like two of the tracks are composed by the same artist too, so it's a running game. And if you don't like some of their stuff, you probably don't like all their stuff. But I mean, it's a mixed bag on the actual music tracks. And also, I mean, being a rhythm game, I don't really quite, I mean, this is coming from a guy who plays like pop music and Guitar Freaks and heck, Rock Band and all that. But the notes or the rhythm isn't quite there. And what I mean by that is like, yeah, there's music playing. Yeah, you're stepping and moving. But I would be remiss to say that I'm moving to the beat of the song and picking up beat souls in tune with the beat. And maybe Zoo Corp is hearing this and going, well, yeah, we never intended for the music to correlate with the steps. It's just music playing over your dude running. And that's fine. It's cool if you want to do that. I'm just saying, when I hear Rhythm Game, I think I'm doing something to the beat. And in this, I just feel more like the only thing that the song is influencing is the BPM. And then the notes are just the notes. They're just there to dodge or whatever.
No.
But that's not to say the game is bad. I enjoy going through the levels and getting my normal, then my hard, and feeling like, yeah, I got that perfect combo. And it does get challenging. The game isn't always easy. Honestly, once you start getting past like difficulty 6 or 7, the challenge starts to show up. And I kind of appreciate that, mostly because if you're playing a rhythm game anyway, you're going for full combos. You're not just going for passables. So if you get passables on a level that's tough, you're proud, but you'll always come back for a full combo. That's just the nature of the beast. It's what we do. But I do wish that there was a little bit more variety in the composer. I do wish the music really resonated with me more, as opposed to the few tracks that did. But that doesn't make the game a bad one. It just means that the music wasn't quite up to stuff with me. But the gameplay is still enjoyable, and you'll get there's 45 levels with varying difficulties and a whole mode to make it doubly difficult. That is available to you to just kind of ramp it up on yourself. So there's gameplay here. Just a matter of how much the music matters to you while you're doing it.
Well, it's $10. What do you think?
Try it. If it goes on sale for $5, give it a buy.
Sounds like this is something that they just needed more variety with composers.
Yes, they did. You pretty much nailed it there. They needed more composer variety to shake things up a bit. Because again, even if I'm saying that I didn't quite feel like my movements were really to the beat of the song, if the song is good, I'm still going to have fun. I mean, just how it is. I mean, I love game music, so I look forward to music with good games. So, games with good music. I'm drunk, but I'm not. I need an excuse.
Brooke's drunk.
Well, you know, I wish I was drunk. I'm going to get started on that.
Welcome to the SML Crunk Kid.
Can too.
Oh, man. All right. Zoo Corporation's been busy because they got another game to talk about. That is Pretty Girl Speed, developed and published by Zoo Corporation. Released February 24th on Steam for $4.99. An easy-to-play, fast-paced game. Here comes the Speed card game. Quickly put out the cards that connect sequentially to the numbers on the table, and when all your cards are gone first, you win. Play a serious game with pretty girls and aim for the Speed Throne. Chris, tell us about Pretty Girl Speed.
The Speed Throne does sound like something from like my my childhood in North Texas, which is like a big meth capital. Anyway, yeah, so Pretty Girls Speed. So this is the newest in the Pretty Girls series, which is a rather tame, like kind of high quality take on like certain like kind of games and stuff like that you just want to play if you want to enjoy like just a standard game with like some anime ladies. And I do. I always enjoy these. So this one incorporates the card game Speed, and because this would not be a very long review otherwise, I'm going to describe what Speed is. So Speed is one of those kind of games that you can learn in like, you know, 5 minutes. If you have a deck of cards and you're bored, you place two cards down and two players like draw out four cards, and the idea is to like basically like, so there's, let's say there's a 3 is one of those cards that's face up. Well, if you've got a 4 or if you've got a 2, you can then play that card and then draw another. But once that 3 net is now a 4, let's say you put it down a 4, now you can put a 5 on there or a 3 again to like, you know, get rid of another card. You know, as long as you got a card that's on one side of that other card, you know, ace being like the loop around, you know, connected to kings and twos, then basically the deal is to get your card down as fast as you can, because if the other person has the same card and they play it before you, then you miss it and you have to like go for the next number. So, like, that's kind of like the deal with speed. It very much it's one of the few card games that actually does rely on like some physical ability to like put down a card faster than the other person can put it down, and you like really have to like think as well, you know, because you just constantly got these numbers that are changing constantly, like, you know, when you're trying to play it. And so yeah, this game is simply just playing that game against 10 different girls. Unlike the other games, there's not like different tiers where you get to see them in different costumes if you win. As far as I could tell, there's no real like costume change element of this. It's just like if you beat one of them, then you get to move on to the next one. And if you beat all of them, then what you can do then is try to beat your time, or you can play the challenge mode, which is just 100 sequential levels and see how far you can go. So yeah, that is the game. Once again, the music's good. The actual gameplay is really good because, honestly, I don't like playing speed. mentally, I'm good at it. I just don't like the physical aspect of, like, slamming down cards, like, as fast as I can. It's fun against certain people, I guess.
I like this version of Solitaire. The competitive speed I'm not as big a fan of, but I like the Solitaire mode. That's just, you know, I forget the name of it, but...
Oh, yeah, I forgot it, too.
it's in 3D Solitaire, if anyone has that game. I know that was the main game that we had for the longest time, but it's in there.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's another way of playing it and stuff. But, I mean, I just mean, like, the real card game. So I like playing it in a computer version, and it was pretty fun. The challenge is real legit, too. You know, I could accuse some of these games of being a little on the easy side, but this one, some of these girls were real fast, and they ate my lunch for sure.
Aki wishes these girls were really fast.
Oh. Wait, wasn't she like... I wasn't reading the chat because it's always too distracting when I talk about these games. Aki's mad that
there's no nudity in the game.
Yes, that is very true, and that is a point that I feel must make.
It's fan service, but it's not adult.
It, you know, I don't even know if it's fan service. I think it's just there's girls large that are boobs. A certain shape.
There are significantly large breasts.
Yes,
in the preview images for this game, that is fan service. No,
and all throughout, that is not false advertising for sure.
There are boobs.
I just I don't know. Like, if a girl of a certain shape is just wearing a costume that is not like. That's not really anything. Like, I don't know if that's fan service, but maybe I just don't know my anime tropes that well.
I say if the boob is larger than the head, it's fan service.
That's okay. A fair rule of thumb.
That's cool. I like that. I mean, I'll concede to that point. And,
all right, so $5, what do you say?
Yeah, $5, it's a fun game of speed. Again, if you like the anime girls, it's a bonus, but not the main feature.
All right. Next up is Moto Rotor MC, developed by Masai Games in Shinyadin, published by Radleika Games, released February 25th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $6.99. The iconic Moto Rotor MC was first released in 1992. Full speed ahead, 30 years in this beloved title is now poised at the starting line on consoles. Choose from an array of cool cars and drivers, as well as a variety of gameplay modes. When it comes to iconic video game fun, Moto Rotor MC is a time-honored first-place finish. Purnell, how is Moto Rotor MC?
Okay, if you're listening to this, Radleika, I got to tell you right now, please let me know if I'm missing something, because I read the game's description, and I've been playing the game. I don't know where you choose a car. I don't know where you choose a driver. It doesn't exist. Yeah. Anyway, get that out the way. Now, Moto Rotor... honestly, I have a nice bit of an affinity to Moto Rotor. If you were listening to the beginning of the episode, you heard me mention that I owned a Turbo Duo back in the day, or still do. And one of the games I owned for that Turbo Duo was the original Moto Rotor, which, even though a lot of people claim it's not good, those people are dumb. The game is fun. The only thing that sucked about it is that it had like a weird like scrolling catch-up thing. But again, the game was from the 80s. Get over it. But apparently, I didn't realize that game had sequels, one being Moto Rotor 2, and then also this game, which I didn't know existed until Joe said, hey, you want to review this game? And I was like, wow, this exists. Interesting. So I am now able to play it. And here are my thoughts on it. The best way to describe Moto Rotor RC is to
MC.
Say, I want to say RC because like remote cars.
But it's not MC.
MC Hammer going to smack
them up. Maybe it's motorized cars? Mini cars?
Mini cars. There we go. I'll go with that. the best way to describe this game is to compare it to an old classic game called Super Sprint, which was in the arcade and also on the NES. It's a top-down racing game where you can see the entire track at all times, and you have five cars that are racing around. At the start of the race, you can pretty much accelerate by pressing the Y button and reverse with the B button. Right trigger is pretty much firing missiles. Left trigger is to drop a bomb behind yourself, which can blow up and pretty much both those make the cars spin out, basically. But essentially, you're using a combination of those things to screw other players over while also driving and making your laps. Usually around, like, it could be like 8-9 lap races, but the laps themselves are fairly quick. So even though you hear me say 9 laps, they go pretty fast, so don't sweat it. Honestly, I feel like the game is fairly no frills in the sense that it's pretty much exactly what it is. You boot the game up, you do some laps with your friends or by yourself with these random computer components, and you're having a good time. The main gameplay mode is circuit, where you can go in and choose one of five different circuits, each one having five different tracks available on it. You race all of them, and based on where you place, you get a series of points, and based on how you do at the end of it determines if you win or lose. And then, of course, you get the credits, because that's how these games worked, for credits getting just injected into the game. Aside from that, there's like a time trial version of it where you can just choose a course and just run laps around it with the computer components in there too and try to go for the best time. There's no Make mode, which is essentially like four different like soccer ball tracks where you can either do 1v1 or 2v2 and you're trying to drive the soccer ball into the opposing goal for points.
That's Rocket League.
Rocket League before Rocket League, but without the stunts. The thing about this game that threw me off, and I admit I'm comparing it to a game that many people don't even know friggin' exists, is that this is the third game in the Motor Rotor series, and you can't upgrade your car in any way, shape, or form. Like Motor Rotor, you could take money that you would win from winning races, and you could buy upgrades to your car that increase, like you buy a new engine for speed or tires for traction, that kind of stuff. And in this game, there's nothing like that between the races. It's just race, win, race, win, race, win. And the reason why I feel like I can make that comparison, aside from just the fact that the original Motor Rotor had it, is the fact that Super Sprint also did it, though it was a simple form of just collecting wrenches and then upgrading your stats with the wrenches. But this game is literally just drive your car and win a race. Simplifies things more, I give that, so it's not a big deal. It's just I wish there was more meat to this bone. But I do enjoy what I've played of it. But the tracks are fun. They do get a little wacky in some cases. Like there's like icy areas on the tracks. There's like speed boosts. There's some areas where like the track will kind of do like a circle, so you can like kind of collide with the other cars that are coming on. And of course, it's just pandemonium when multiple cars are clustered together, slamming into each other. And the music is really good too. I mean, this game was originally released on the Super CDR 2, so it had Red Book Audio for a game this relaxed, which is surprising, but it's good music. I mean, if you made a Turbo Duo game with bad music, you just stop composing. That's on you. But the music in this game is legit too. All in all, my only real gripe is I just wish there was more to the like more options for like the racing itself. But I mean, as just a simple racer, it can be one of those fun little games you just kind of break out with your friends at like a party or something. It's like, hey, take the Joy-Con. We're going to do some laps around these weird courses and have some fun with it.
And it's cool for preservation, like to get an older game like this that, like you said, you didn't even know it existed.
Yep. And now that you mentioned it, I'm glad you said it, because there's a segue. Hey, if you're listening, get the Shoebeebin Man games, damn it. I will buy all of them because we only ever got Shock Man, and there's like three of them. Actually, there's four of them. I want to play those, and I will play them and buy them or review them and maybe still buy them. But port those fuckers. There's so many Turbo Graphics and Duel games I would be happy to see come over here. And this is still one of them. Like, I am genuinely glad you picked this game up because I was able to experience it and enjoy it for myself. Pick up more.
Well, $7. What do you say on this one?
I'll give it a fuck it. Why not? It's worth it to see, hey, this is what people were playing back in the day. It's enjoyable. And people were paying about this much to get the Motor Rotor, virtual console release when it was on the Wii U. So I think the price is about on par.
Cool. All right. We got one final game to talk about tonight. That is a preview of Curse of Eternity, developed and published by I Make the Games. Such a great company.
I'm making the games.
I'm making the games.
I don't play the games. I just make them.
And make it the games. It's releasing.
It's literally spelled out make
it. Yeah, I make the games. It's beautiful. I love it. Releasing sometime in 2022 on Steam. A demo is available on Steam starting February 21st, so it is out now if you want to give it a go. A hardcore action RPG with diverse combat and feats-based multi-classing. Start as one of three hero builds and either continue to specialize or branch out and make your build your own. Slice, shoot, and zap your way through a dystopian world and fulfill your own deific journey. Chris, tell us, what is Curse of Eternity?
What is deific?
I don't know.
Like, okay. Deity.
Yeah.
Is it like terrific deities?
I guess so.
I like that Joe and I are just guessing.
Yeah.
Like, probably deity.
that was my guess. That has to do with like your own godlike.
Yeah, if it was like a JRPG, it'd be deicidal because you're always out to kill
Deific, making it or tending to make divine or of or characterized by divine or godlike. There you go.
Awesome. Okay. Hey, well, anyway, I give this a bucket.
Just make it a games.
Very good.
So what is Curse of Eternity?
All right. So this is a game that is kind of bridging the old and the new. In the sense of the old, you play as three very well-established fantasy RPG, like archetypes for action RPGs, rather. You have the big brute, and then you have like the slender stabby assassin, stabby McStab face, and then you have the wizard, let's call him Telly Savalas, who has a stick with a book at the end of it, which I actually love the weapons in this. The bow and arrow in the game is like this longhorn cattle skull that, like, you know, the drawstring that goes across like the nose part or whatever, and like, I don't know, some really cool looking like weapons and stuff here. But anyways, so yeah, basically like you pick your character and you start running through and, you know, collecting shinies so that you can level up and, you know, do level branches and stuff. I didn't play it long enough to get into that. I don't think there's enough there to get through that. But yeah, it's basically kind of teaching you like how to go, and you know, it's running around, definitely seems to have like that kind of Dark Souls mechanic of like, you know, utilizing rolls to dodge enemies and then, you know, kind of going between like, you know, some smaller attacks and then some like big thrusty attacks. And each character can actually kind of attack the same. I don't know if all the characters can use magic. Telly Savalas can. And weirdly, the magic, like when I was playing as him, it's like I could hit people with my book stick, but to cast a spell, I had to go into a menu and like per shot. So I'm not exactly sure that's maybe I missed a hotkey somewhere or something. But that's not going to do if that's how the game is. It turned out I was doing much better with the assassin. Stabby McStab face was really nice because she's good with a bow and she also got them stabbies. And she's also
I love the fast. Stabbies.
Yeah, I gotta love the stabbies. And usually the archer type is my character in these kind of games anyway. But yeah, the whole thing is laid out in this really nice 3D style. It's cel shaded, which is kind of also a bit of a throwback. It's definitely not like a realistic type thing, like, you know, like a Dark Souls or whatever. So it's kind of like Dark Souls, but cel-shaded in that sense. It's also not super difficult, but then I didn't play far enough into it to like be expecting any really super huge challenges. It looks like it could have those along the way, but I was mostly beating up little goblins and stuff and trying to figure out where to go. Another thing is, like, you know, there's not a lot of lore or story in the game. You learn lore by picking up books and just kind of reading them in the menu. But they're mostly just like other characters just kind of talking about stuff. And I couldn't really piece together much of a story out of that. But I imagine that's something they're going to expand on later. Yeah, there's a lot of potential in this one. But, you know, the demo I played, like, I just kind of got lost a little bit. And just kind of wandered around and beat up goblins and collected books and stuff. And that's about it. I played as all three characters and did the same thing.
Now, is this something that people should keep their eyes on? Is this something that people should grab the demo, wishlist it? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of potential in this one. I really like the way it moves. It's got a really like nice style. I will say the combat feels a bit floaty. Really just feels like you're just kind of pointing your, you know, you're kind of pointing like this long attack animation at an enemy and just hope that they don't, you know, like stab you while you're trying to do your thing. So it's not like swift animation or like swift combat or anything. It's like, I don't know. But I did like the moving around. I like the way it looks, the way it sounds. Yeah, it looks good all around. So I'd say go ahead, and if you are interested in like that kind of, like I said, old meets new as far as like these action RPGs are concerned, go ahead and throw this one on the wish list. I think I'm going to be keeping an eye on it for sure.
Cool. And when we hear more about this game, I'm sure we'll take another look at it.
Sweet.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. Made it through another one. Brooke, are you drunk yet?
I'm not. Son of a bitch. Should have gotten it together there. A little tipsy, though. So allow me to read the things that made me laugh out loud tonight. Okay.
Yes.
Tim said something about Juicy Center. I don't remember what that was, but LOL. Then shortly after that, Joe said, ham. That was so... I'm trying to, like, run over and, like, unmute whenever I start cackling maniacally. I'll get better at that. Purnell said the word turd. We already went over that. Proud.
That was a good one. Good
proud.
Moment.
Purnell also started talking in a voice about something. He was like, oh, I'm this thing in the game. And it was so funny. I don't even remember what it was about, but I started laughing. Chris was like, no, it was Purnell. He's like, you selected from the MA menu. That was easy. Super funny. He just started muttering to himself. And then you said Beat Souls. You're like, oh, I said the name of the game. Just started cackling. So and then you referenced something that I must be missing from previous episodes. You're like, here's a Purnell purely subjective, and I just really want that to be like a thing. So please tell me that's already a thing. It's already a term for the show.
Yes.
It is now. Fuck it.
here's a Purnell purely. I'm gonna start using that when I'm giving reviews to be subjective. I'll be like, hey, here's a Purnell purely subjective for you.
Hell yeah.
Chris referenced the math capital. That was
only you're allowed to do those though. Purnell's not allowed to have a Purnell purely. Like, it's sure only can. You.
Only Brooke could do the upper nail purely subjective. I love that. I'm so happy.
I had to do it myself. Like,
oh my God. Chris was like, the stabbies. And Joe was like, gotta love the stabbies. And that's it. Those are all my LOL moments that I didn't unmute in time for.
I'm glad we entertained you tonight.
So glad I joined.
We've missed you, Brooke. It's been a dark time without you, and now our beacon of sunshine is back.
Oh, and, my God. I'm going to cry. Yeah, I missed y'all, too, somehow. You know what I noticed the other day? So I was at Chris's show on Twitch for the Super High Tops, and, you know, I haven't hung out on Twitch a lot, so I didn't understand that you get, like, custom reactions when you sub to a specific channel. I just am not the most experienced Twitch user, so I had no idea... and then I just wanted to like start crying with my reactions. And I noticed there was not an SML cry reaction. I'm going to ask that we do some kind of SML react that is like someone weeping, someone crying. That would be so great.
I mean, we have six cats.
But is one of them crying or weeping or sobbing?
But one is spread eagle.
Thank you.
I mean, look at this. Like, my friend has only, like, three emotes, and one of them is Cubone.
Oh, that's prize. So good. I recently subbed to, I can't even remember his name, but David.
David Piano?
Yes. Okay, now I got
his
these.
His last name is Piano?
Good. Oh, my God, Bruno. That joke was just popping off that night. Oh, my God.
We got David Piano on piano. You got redundant there. No, that's his last name. What?
People were like, do you think he was pressured to go into music because his last name was Piano? And I was just like losing it.
Wanted to go into stunt car driving, but just didn't quite work.
Carnage saying that my Piddles emote looks like it could cry. All I have to do is Photoshop some tears on Piddles, and we'll have a crying kitty.
Let's do it. I'm going to learn how to use Photoshop, and I'm going to take this up.
Sweet. All right, well, that is it for this episode. We made it through another one.
I have crying Batman.
Oh, no. Hell yeah.
My parents!
Oh my God.
I would have ended it there, but I have to send another thanks to Eduardo at Eclipse Games for coming on and chatting with us about Super Toy Cars. I have to get the plug out of the way. Now do the parents thing.
Oh my God. Okay, that was my biggest laugh I've had on this show. That was so I'm like a tear is coming out of my eye right now. That was
like Batman.
Explodes. I enter into self mode. Escape my disgrace, displace my face. Someplace to wait.